Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another one of our Survivor postseason interviews. And today we're going to be talking with Allison Raybould about her game in Survivor David versus Goliath. This is the fourth of these interviews. We've also got interviews with Christian, with Nick, and with Gabby up on robhasawebsite.com. I will have links to those interviews in the post for this podcast that you're listening to on robhasawebsite.com. So we're going to have a nice chat with Allison here today. If you are a Big Brother fan, you will know that the Celebrity Big Brother cast got dropped over the weekend. So be sure to check out my reactions to the Celebrity Big Brother cast with Taryn Armstrong. That podcast is up at robhasawebsite.com. We'll also have our Celebrity Big Brother draft with the LFC coming up later on this week. Before we get to Allison, let me also thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And I'm sure Dr. Allison knows that dental hygiene is also very important. And Quip is helping you get the year started off right, taking better care of your teeth and gums, because Quip is the better electric toothbrush that can help, because Quip looks like something that is out of the future with sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. I love the Quip. I have one here and I get to use it, and it has a timer so you know which quadrant to work on. You get 30 seconds on one quadrant, move to the next one, get all four quadrants. You know that you did the right job because the toothbrush is buzzing, and then it lets you know that you got through it. It can stick to your mirror, put it wherever you want in your bathroom. Not only does it work, it looks a lot cooler than any other toothbrush that you're going to have. And best of all, the brush heads get automatically delivered, so you never have to worry about, when did I buy this toothbrush? How long have I been using this toothbrush for? No, they send the new bristles to you on the dentist recommended schedule of every 3 months for just $5. A friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh and stay committed to your oral health. 75% of us are using old, worn out bristles that are ineffective. And Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, and they have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. I love using my Quip. It keeps me honest about brushing my teeth for the dentist recommended 2 minutes. You're going to love it too. 1 million happy, healthy mouths do too. Quip starts at just $25. If you go to getquip.com/Rob right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip, getquip.com/Rob. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our latest Survivor guest to the podcast to talk about her experience in Survivor David versus Goliath. That she is a Goliath, but it doesn't mean that she wasn't hardworking. She was called Wonder Woman at times, and she was everybody's favorite threat. Please welcome Allison Raybould to the podcast. Allison, how are you?
I am great, especially after that glowing introduction. My God, that was glorious. I'm putting that on my CV. Also, I'm checking my pulse right now, because as soon as you hit record, I started to notice that my heart was racing and I'm definitely tachycardic. So I'll take a deep breath and calm down. Back at tribal.
A lot there, Allison. Can you talk us through when you take your pulse? Because I wasn't sure. It seemed like it definitely happened once, and then I wasn't sure if it was a meme or if it's a real thing that you do. Are you your own Fitbit?
I don't in real life check my pulse. However, when at tribal council and I know my name is being written down, I do, which is to say, I checked it 5 times in a row, therefore. But no, in real life, I guess I've discovered that it gives me comfort to know what's going on with my body physiologically. I don't know if that makes sense. It did not intend to be a meme, but is it one of my favorite memes of myself? Certainly it takes
of the many.
Pride.
Yes. But can you really get a reading, like as somebody who is a non-medical person like myself, are you actually monitoring your pulse? Are you able to actually count it out?
Without a clock, no. However, I can get a sense of, do I have a fast heart rate or is my heart rate normal? And let's just say when Nick stole my vote, I was in what's called SVT, I presume, which is called supraventricular tachycardia. So yeah, yes. It was a dangerous level that was happening then.
So is that a thing that you would recommend to people, like as a way to sort of self-soothe? Yeah, I feel like that. Would you recommend that to people? Like, because I know a lot of people suffer from anxiety. If you're able to sort of like, measure yourself and realize, oh, okay, I'm elevated. Is that a way that you'd be able, or would people just freak out if they knew their pulse?
I've never given anyone that bit of counseling professionally. However, via direct message on Instagram, there's been a shocking number of people who have came out and said that they also checked their pulse and they wondered if I had anxiety, if this was some sort of mechanism I had developed. And the answer is no. I just, at the moment, decided that I needed to know what was going on with my heart rate. And turns out that I had to repetitively check my pulse.
Because I feel like that it would be something as a, amateur psychologist that I would think that, like, hey, oh, I'm feeling very anxious. Let me feel my pulse. And I feel like just in that activity of having some way to channel the, the anxiety and the rush that you're feeling and just the being like measured and being, starting to count the pulsing. I feel like that's something that probably would calm people down.
I actually think that there are probably psychologists that make this recommendation. Logically, it follows. Like, you have breathing techniques, you have other relaxation techniques. So if this is a way for you to be in tune with your body and know what your body is doing while your mind is in overdrive and kind of seizing control of your body, then yes, I think that it is a great technique. And I'm always down for a pulse check. So I would encourage anyone and everyone to check their own pulse in moments of heightened tension.
Okay. If I could get some sort of a readout on people's pulses as they listen to the podcast also, I think that would be good. That would help me internally in terms of what's working and what's not working. And Allison, the other big thing that, everywhere is Hi Allison, of course, that really became its own thing of all of the people on Reddit saying hi to you. Do you really embrace that?
Absolutely. I think Reddit gave me such life and such joy this season, which you do not expect necessarily from Reddit when you go and expose yourself and completely give over control of how you are filtered and how you are received. But I think for me, it was kind of tied hand in hand to this relatively quieter edit. The fact that Reddit could recognize and appreciate me, I gained value from that. It meant a lot that they saw the little gems that I had in the early episodes where I was quiet, that they paid attention. And then, I am a super fan. I think I said to Wiggler in my First One Out interview that I was an aspiring super fan. There's no doubt in my mind. I have been lurking on Reddit for a long time. So I had a lot of fun kind of winking at them and being very coy about, yes, I see everything. I see it all, but I will reveal myself in due time.
So when you refer to yourself as an aspiring super fan, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that there is this cult, and I use that in a loving way, of Survivor fandom. And I think it is a spectrum. My mom considers herself a Survivor superfan, but she just watches, she's watched every episode. So to her, that is what superfan means. To me, what superfan means is that I am digesting all of the podcasts. I am reading all of the exit interview or reading all the interviews and so on and so forth. I will say that now that I have played the game, I need to tap out of the Survivor super fandom. Mm-hmm. It has a way of kind of taking over your whole entire life. And when you have other commitments, it's just not healthy.
Yeah. And so is Survivor something that is just really popular amongst everybody in your family?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My mom is the one, she watched all the way throughout all 18 years, and she recruited my sister back. And I actually lived with my sister at the time, and I remember making fun of her and being like, you watch Survivor? I can't believe you watch Survivor. And then she went on this hike with my brother, and they digested one episode, and my brother got hooked. And I have two stand-up comedian brothers. they started a podcast, a Survivor dedicated podcast, as the best people do, like you. And
the many, many people do.
Yeah. The upper echelon of society is what I regard mm-hmm. it as. And then I realized, well, if my whole family is talking about this, then I need to plug in. I need to watch too. And I came back to Millennials versus Gen X, which wonderful season to come back to, a beautiful storyline, and was hooked. And from that moment forth, I just started like absorbing every bit of Survivor knowledge that I could. And I was legitimately taking notes on the game, like memorizing details about what worked, what didn't work, memorizing what they use for word puzzles, because there's a pattern to what they use. So it was obsessive. Well, I wouldn't say it was obsessive. What I called it was my second job. I worked very hard in my first job, but my mm-hmm. second job was learning Survivor, not even knowing that I was going to apply one day, just learning this really cool game. And I overdid it, because I condensed basically 37 or 36 seasons into 2 years of my life. And that's why I think I'm in needing to withdraw a little bit post yeah. my season.
Allison, is that just the nature of your personality, where you sort of like start to get engaged with something and then want to learn everything there is to know about it? Or did something particular about Survivor really resonate with you?
It's actually a combination of both. I don't believe in obsessive personalities, but I do believe that if something commands my attention, I am going to just like throw myself into that particular thing. And Survivor ended up being one of those things. Obviously, medicine has been that thing for me. Medicine is the greatest example of that thing for me. But then there is also the aspect of this show is incredibly compelling and incredibly complex. And I was just blown away by the social politics of it, the social dynamics and what it meant to be a successful Survivor player, because in any given situation, one thing that's good on one season is bad on another season. And I think then there was this added complexity that with Adam Klein being the winner of the season that I came back to, and with his storyline being related to some degree to his mom having stage 4 lung cancer, I started watching Survivor at the exact sort of parallel moment that professionally I made the decision to be an oncologist. And I don't believe in like weird fate. I don't know, but I do believe that the stars were aligned and I was meant to come back to Survivor at that season as I was professionally having this self-discovery. And therefore I hold significance to that fact. So that's why there was something special about Survivor for me and where I was at personally and professionally.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to Adam and tell him that his personal experience inspired you to go on the show?
I mean, we briefly like interacted on social media, and I got to meet him at the finale after party and everything. But I don't know if he knows the impact or the backstory behind it all. But yeah, it definitely.
I'm sure he'd be thrilled to know more about it, because I know that type of making an impact in that way, I know is something that's very important to him.
Right, definitely, and I think it's funny that you've used the phrase making an impact, because there was a point in time on the island that I had this realization that there was only going to be one winner, and I wanted it to be me. Obviously, I was called the most competitive person. There's no denying yeah. how competitive I am. I wanted it to be me, but I knew that every single one of us was playing for a greater purpose. And that was when I started to discover what my greater purpose was. And so it's cool because, you know, Adam got to win, but he also could have an impact beyond just winning. And I think that's what Nick has in front of him too, is that he is going to have an impact beyond just winning, carrying the torch of our season.
What was the greater purpose that you had going out there?
So I say that it was to understand human suffering. You know, my patients, their bodies are riddled with cancer, and they go through the worst possible nausea, starvation, and their body literally eats away at them at some point. And so not that what I experienced out there in 37 days and living through 2 cyclones and understanding what it feels like to be hungry and what it feels like to suffer and what it feels like to be cold, that is just like the smallest pales in comparison to what one of my patients goes through. But I do think that I can remember those moments and, number one, empathize more profoundly. But number two, my career is hard, right? I do deal with death and dying on a very regular basis. And it sometimes causes what's called compassion fatigue, where you the well of compassion runs out and you can't give to your patients. And because I had this experience where I was so under the gun for so long and kind of really having to claw my way through, I discovered a resiliency that I thought existed, but it's really awesome to have evidence in front of me that it does exist. So that is what I take away from it, is that I have a true grit and I have a resiliency that I'm going to carry with me throughout my career. And in those moments when I am feeling fatigued in the amount of compassion that I can give, the amount of empathy that I can offer, I get to just tap back and say, no, dig deeper. Just like on day 35, day 36, no, just dig deeper.
And how have you been able to incorporate that into your practice now that you're back home?
I think it just comes down to human connection. That's the beautiful thing about medicine for me. Obviously, the scientific discovery really draws me in. But what it is that you get to apply scientific discovery to human relationships. And I think that it's very easy, and given, especially I'm fresh out of residency, you yourself are working 80 hours a week, you're doing 30 hour shifts, and you're physically and emotionally exhausted. And it's important to, even when you are feeling physically, emotionally exhausted, to remember that the person sitting in front of you in the hospital bed has it so much worse. And so I think that's how I'm bringing it back to the hospital.
Do you recommend that to players, that they figure out, you know, besides the, you know, the prize or the glory, that is, should you go out there with, you know, another purpose, or is that too much of a distraction from what you need to do in terms of the game?
I don't think you should go out there with an intended other purpose. I think that you should use this experience for the personal discovery and growth and beautiful self-reflection that it can be. But I think, you know, if you want to win, you got to focus on all of your attentions on what it means to get to the end and what that path looks like. I will say, however, that if you're being really authentic and true to yourself, people are going to recognize that. And, you know, that can be a great strength in this game of social connection.
Okay. That's a very interesting topic, and one that I really have not talked a lot about in all these different survivor interviews. So thank you for sharing all that. And I'd love to, discuss that more in future conversations. But Allison, I want to talk about your game in particular. And I know that it was something that you did not love in terms of the amount of your game that you that we got to see at home on our TV screens, because it doesn't make it that you suffered any less. You were still out there the same. What was it? 37 days. Same, yep. 37 days. So it's not like you took any less punishment, but we got to see less at times of your story. And I'm sure that everybody, as they're out there, is, you know, the hero of their own narrative, as Stephen likes to say. And so from your first person perspective, that you were the star of the show.
I mean, that's exactly right. We all come back from the experience, and I wrote my own narrative, and my narrative was this person chosen as the strongest Goliath female to represent her tribe, the person who stepped up puzzle after puzzle and was often victorious, not every time, but frequently victorious in tribal immunities, and was in a great spot in the Goliath majority, and was also, truthfully, the one that was pulling together her relationships to form what I call the alliance that never was, but what the show framed as the Strike Force of Six. Mm-hmm. And because of my, indecision, I fell from the top of two potential alliances to the bottom of one where I was clawing my way. And I was the underdog, and I was the contender, along with one or two other people. And so it was crushing to have scene after scene that was of vital importance to my story continually left on the editing room floor. And I mean, I think there's another greater takeaway, is that the 20 people who make it on the island were all really dynamic, interesting, funny people.
Sure.
And then when you are the purpled person, especially when you're a purpled person who makes it to the final five and has breaks a record of the number of tribal councils with your name consecutively written, and is the second most voted for person in the game, there is something to be said about you doubt your story, how you viewed it, and you doubt yourself. I start thinking, wow, I must not be charismatic. Oh, I must not be funny. Like, there's a lot of doubt that comes from putting everything out there and then having so little kind of gleaned back.
How do you come to terms with that?
Oh, at the end of the day, I say, well, I was interesting enough to get on the show, so I'm not so boring. But no, I think what truthfully is that I understand the duty of production is not to tell my story. I get to know my story. The people who I played this game with get to know my story in full detail. But their job is to tell the story of David versus Goliath, which was a badass, awesome story, and to tell the story of why Nick won and why so-and-so, the other two, made it to the final three. That's kind of the duty that they have to us. And I think the reason that this was partly so crushing is because I did view myself as the contender. I follow Edgic, and to have been written off by Edgic from practically episode 3 or 4 was
not by Randy Bailey.
Thank God for Randy Bailey. I am a big Randy Bailey fan after his stint on Our Hat. So I really appreciated that he could see the little gems. And I want to comment actually that I am not upset with my edit because everything they included of me was so true to form and exactly like characteristic me. So if we're going to only get snippets of me, I'm glad that it can be the snippets that I love and that I cherish. It's just that because this experience has been to some extent life altering, I want to share those life altering moments with all of the people that I love back home. And of course I can do that in retelling the event, but there's something about getting to show it to them.
Sure.
And I was deprived of so many moments where I could show them my relationships or show them the moments of victory, show them the moments of weakness too.
All right. Well, we have an opportunity here today to be able to talk about some of those moments, and in particular, that this is a wonderful opportunity to get a little insight into what was going on the Goliath tribe. I've done 3 of these interviews with your castmates, but they were all from the David tribe. And really, outside of my interview with Jeremy and my interview with Natalie, I really have not gotten a lot of info from the castaways in terms of what life was like for the Goliaths.
Yes. Well, life was good for the Goliaths. I mean, first of all, there was this impression that it was just Baywatch on the Goliath tribe, which I find funny, especially as someone that does it. I don't know. That was just very funny, but we had so much fun, especially because we did not lose until we didn't lose an immunity until day 9. And so that meant 9 days of us getting to just bond and connect and get to know each other, which is that's a privilege in Survivor. And there were so many times where we were all just hanging out at the beach together, where we were all laughing. We connected really quickly. A lot of us connected, and that is kind of why there was this unanimous first vote, is because so many of us got along that it just made logical sense that we weren't ready to draw a line in the sand. But that I would say the overarching theme on the Goliath tribe was a lot of fun. I think there was some hubris involved as well, which was something that I cautioned people about, because we had this mentality of we're just going to win. And I thought that as someone who identifies more with an underdog, I thought it was arrogant of us to have that mentality repetitively. But those were, in general, the Goliaths really got along, and there were some heated moments. I think we build towards that at our first tribal, but we connected as well.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you were somebody who saw yourself as more of an underdog or a David, so to speak. And we got to see that in the first episode when you were on the mat, and you were somebody who sort of objected to being put out there as a Goliath. And I want to play a clip of that just to refresh people's memories on that.
Do you belong in the Goliath tribe?
I have no doubt in my mind
I come from a family with a huge legion of support, and I may not have faced the same adversity as some of the people on the David mat over there. But I still understand being an underdog and working hard to achieve whatever you put your mind to.
Okay, I get the work ethic, and I'm not setting that aside. But
no. Did you feel like this moment was shown? Because I want to play the second part of that. But did you feel like that this moment was shown as you remember it?
Ish. I mean, it was a total setup, and there was a big line of questioning.
Yeah, you got real setup.
There's such a line of questioning that they don't show, where Jeff says, tell me like what type of family you're from. And I say, like, large Midwestern family. The first thing I say is like a really loving, supportive family. And of course, Jeff is like not interested in hearing about how wonderful my family is. He's like, no, tell me what type of family. And then I'm like, large Midwestern Irish Catholic. And then in my head, I'm like, God, I shouldn't have told them I was Catholic. This is a problem. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, like, religion, politics, anything can be a problem on Survivor. And then, like, he goes down the line and eventually legitimately is like, tell me about the class of your family. And I just hate the idea that David versus Goliath is going to be class wars, because if you look at half of the people on the David mat, they come from the same socioeconomic status as I come from. Mm-hmm. And I think, so I want to talk this moment. I had such tension and I knew this moment was going to make it in the premiere. And the truth of the matter is that I am so proud of the family that I come from. I am from an extraordinary family and a family that has created opportunity for me, but has also, I have been able to seize that opportunity. So I really resented the idea that, like, I was a doctor just because my dad is a doctor. Mm-hmm. Because I know plenty of people who have physician parents and they are not on a tract like that. I think the other thing, though, is that I've been able to reflect a lot on this particular conversation. And I think that there is something to be said about owning privilege. And I have been uncomfortable with the idea of owning privilege for a long time. And it simply boils down to, I have worked really hard. I have given up 11 years to become a doctor. And I want my hard work acknowledged. And I don't want Jeff to diminish my hard work. But I think that the takeaway is that I need to understand that where I started the race in life is different from where other people start the race in life. And that doesn't mean that I'm not meant to run the same race. It just means that I need to own my privilege. And so I think that there is good to come out of Jeff trying to set me up and entrap me. I think the third thing that I wanted to touch on is that the sphere that I inhabit, I am not a Goliath. I am because, yeah, I'm a doctor. I am traditionally successful, whatever you want to call that. But I work at a prestigious hospital, and I was a resident when they were airing this, meaning I was a trainee, meaning I was the lower man on the totem pole. And I interact with world leaders. So when I walk into a room, I am not the smartest person in the room. I am not the Goliath in the room. I am the David in the room. And then if we flip that even more and we bring the gender of Survivor into it, I am a woman in medicine. I am inherently an underdog as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And so to have the label Goliath rested on me, I was reluctant. And then I think the final thing is that I am a fan. I understand the optics of a theme like David versus Goliath. And I very much so wanted to be the person that people rooted for. I wanted to be that redeemable, rootable underdog. And I knew that by being a Goliath, that immediately we were going to be the villains. And I don't think that's exactly how it played out, because how are you ever going to make someone as lovely as Kara Kay into a villain? You're just not going to succeed on that. But we were meant to be villains in some regard. And so that's my like diatribe on those 10 seconds of the premiere.
But do you feel like that this conversation is sort of at the crux of what we're talking about with the edit, where your reluctance to, you know, embrace being that Goliath in the show ultimately, and you were an underdog and you were sort of in a bad position in the later stages of the game. And had you been one of the Davids, I think that just by switching your tribe designation, I think it would have switched your edit.
100%. Yes. I think that they wanted they knew who I was going in from casting, but I think that they wanted someone who sat there and rattled off her CV, they frequently ask me, why are you extraordinary? And I almost flat out refuse to answer the question, why am I extraordinary? Because I don't think I'm extraordinary. I think that I've done well for myself, but I think that, and I, in a sense, I think all 19 of us are extraordinary, or all 20 on the island are extraordinary.
Goes without saying.
But yeah, it goes without saying. But that being said, I never am one to tell you why I'm X or Y. I would rather show you. And when you're trying to show someone what makes you a Goliath, that is way more nuanced to put into 42 minutes than someone who can tell you. And then you're absolutely right that if I was on the David Matt, I do believe my edit at the beginning would have been drastically different.
Yeah. It's interesting because I don't know if any other season, if it would have been like that, but just in terms of, you know, the color of your buff kind of changed your story on the show.
Yeah. I think that I like how you put that.
Yeah. So I don't know how much we need to hear when we segue to Pat, but I did say I would play a little more of this.
Put this to the test. Guy in the back corner, what's your name?
Pat.
Pat, let's compare your story versus Pat's. You grew up with what kind of a family?
Right, like he didn't go to like Christian. Like, all right, you down here. Okay, what are you? I'm a robotics engineer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gabby and I come from the exact same upbringing, but that's okay. That's neither here nor there.
Pat is the ace in the hole.
He is the ace in the hole. And I mean, truthfully, I hear that, and that is exactly like gut-wrenching to me. His story is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're going to compare me and him, oh my God, I'm rooting for Pat. Like, I'm the obnoxious entitled doctor, like by comparison to this person who is a salt of the earth person.
Yeah. All right. So Allison, when I was watching some of this back, it seemed to me like that you are very much pushing for Natalie to be a person who is going to be the first target for the Goliaths. Am I misreading that?
So I don't think you're misreading what they showed, but I don't think that they really showed my true opinion. So I think that first, if we're jumping kind of to the Jeremy boot, is that where we're at?
Even in the first episode that there are confessionals where you're talking about Natalie, you have mixed vibes from Natalie.
I think it's so funny because everyone else was so actually hyper intensely, not everyone else. There were many hyper intense negative people that I was sort of the cautious, guarded one saying, we don't need to make a decision yet. We're not going to tribal anytime soon. So I was not, it was sort of that mentality of it's the first boot. If there's an obvious name out there, obviously I'm not going to fall on the sword to try and save this person. But at the same time, I didn't see that we needed to immediately decide it was Natalie when there was no signs of a tribal council in sight.
Okay. From your perspective, who was the leader of the Goliaths?
I think that there were seven people that felt that they were the leader of the Goliaths because we are Goliaths. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you ask this question to any one of us, any one of those people would say, no, I was leading the vote. Yeah. No, I was leading the vote. I think that there were stronger voices out there than others.
Well, how did you see the power dynamics in terms of that group?
So I saw it as there were these seven, quote, younger people, and that was comprised of me, Angelina, Kara, Natalia, and then John, Alec, and Dan. And we, like, often spent time together. I saw that there were four women out there who we were close, although I had some reticence about Natalia. But we were all close and didn't want to give the impression of the women being overly close. And then I saw that I had like the most important connections that I had that we didn't see until very late were my day one ride or die was Alec. The moment we were digging in a hole and it was like, I'm going to watch your back, you watch mine. And then from there, we were 100% transparent with each other. I think that Kara and I were exceedingly close. And then Mike and I were exceedingly close. So it was funny to have these relationships buried, particularly Kara and Mike's relationships, given that that's going to be a 37-day relationship hold.
Yeah. When you talk about the seven younger people on the Goliath tribe, we ultimately did see six of those seven people depicted together in an alliance where it was sort of set up that I don't want to use the word couples, but at least pairs of people of where we saw by the second hour of the show where it's Angelina and Kara and Natalia talking about, OK, you get him, I'll get him and I'll get him. And then that'll be the group of six and we'll control everything.
So that conversation was fascinating because I knew about its origins and its content and intentionally stayed back because I did not want to give the impression that all four women of these younger women got along so well. And the threat, the moment you say there's an all girls alliance is the moment that every single man is like, we got to get rid of the women. Mm-hmm. So I intentionally stayed back, but was immediately filled in on the content. Now, that being said, I thought it was funny to have these pairs because there was one clear pair in Dan and Kara. There was the sleeping arrangements of John and Angelina. And then there was and Alec and Natalia slept by each other as well. But what I will say is that Alec got up every night in the middle of the night and we ran down our strategy. And there was no way that he was ever close to Natalia. So I think the reason they showed that conversation in particular, they showed Natalia saying we have these boys wrapped around our finger, is because where is the landscape of the Goliaths going? And where is the landscape of Natalia and Alec going? And it's about to be that Alec's going to blindside Natalia. So that's part of why that conversation was so important, in that I think it builds up a little bit more to Natalia's blindside.
There's also a moment in the first episode when you and Angelina talk about that idol, and it's you who mentions to Angelina that, hey, will you watch my back? Because we have to make sure that women find idols, because that the ratio that the men are finding the idols over the women is way out of whack. And she's like, Allison, you're reading my mind. That's exactly what I want to talk about.
God damn, the poetic beauty of the fact that scene exists.
Yeah.
Even where Angelina and I will travel in terms of idols.
It really is a beautiful, bookend to the season of that is where your journey starts and also where your journey ends on Survivor.
Yes. So bravo to production for making sure they included that
bravo
one.
Bravo to the Survivor gods. I mean, that's like something that there's no way that anybody who's a producer could really, have a finger on
it that well. Exactly.
Right.
It was funny because I did come into the season in my first one out. I talk about wanting to bring back the Black Widow Brigade, and I'm looking around at these women, and it is five. I mean, Natalie is definitely included in that. Five very strong, successful women standing on the Goliath mat. These are the type of women that I get along with in real life. And so I am thinking my Black Widow Brigade could potentially happen. And more to the point, I'm thinking we need to, you penned the statistic. We need to be the ones finding idols. And my God, I search so much for idols that it is just laughable to me every time that I had to watch someone else find one and be like, oh, that's where it was. That's how you find an idol. Who knew? Mm-hmm. But I was really happy that I could be the one to at least initiate that conversation.
Yeah.
Because I feel so passionately about, yes, women and idols in Survivor, but just women in Survivor.
Now, you had that conversation on day one, day two, very early on in the game, and then you went on to go and play out the rest of the game. Do you have any different thoughts on that subject now that you've gone out there and played?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think that the general trend that we have heard is that the reason women find it less than men is related to where do they hide them. They hide them in the forest or in the jungle. Men are often given the permission to leave camp and go explore, whereas women are often more grounded. I mean, it was fascinating to me that truly traditional gender dynamics played out on a remote island. And by that, I mean, who did the dishes? I did. Who cleaned the shells? I did. Who did the rice? Angelina did. Who tended, it was just mind-boggling that the cult of domesticity, if we can use that term, existed like when there was no social construct, and yet it naturally happened. And so I do still believe that's part of it. I also do believe that more often than, I don't know if this is fair, but that women have a very strong social intuition, and they can understand what it looks like if you go out and search for an idol versus what it looks like to stay back at camp. And how that alone may be problematic to go looking. I will also say that there was a point in the game where I did not care two shits whether or not people were worried about me looking for an idol. I was out there looking for one, but we all were. So I think late stage, it doesn't matter as much. Early stage, the perception of someone looking for an idol matters.
Okay, so let's get to when you guys are going to have your first vote of the season. And it does seem like that you are on board with voting out Natalie, and Angelina comes to you and says, yes, Natalie would be a great second boot, but we should get rid of Jeremy now. Were you on board for that? Did you end up being convinced, or did you sort of reluctantly go along with that for the sake of the unanimous vote?
So it's funny because this is a moment that I say, if I was the winner, this vote would have been told differently, which is to say day four, Mike comes to me and says, Jeremy is coming for you.
Jeremy?
And it's yeah, well done. I thought I was talking to Mike for a second.
I'm treading lightly.
Understandably, I listened to the exit interview. But he tells me that, and it's the first time that I have tears on Survivor, and I kind of break down to Mike, and it's the moment that in my mind I am playing this game with Mike. And so I come back into my other two closest women. I say to Angelina and Dakara, and this is around day 7, day 8, I know that everyone is gung-ho on Natalie, but I feel very nervous about that. And I just want us to consider Jeremy. But it was something I said, we're not even going to tribal yet, so let's just pretend this conversation never existed. So then when we actually end up losing immunity, I think number one, my like mission was to make sure no one blamed me for losing the puzzle, because obviously, I was one of the people who didn't step up. I actually never really wanted to be the person that was stepping up. I remember listening to Dr. Mike talk about how like a piece of advice he got was don't step up for the puzzle. And then day one, he's the one stepping up for the puzzle. And that is exactly what kind of happened. And now I'm talking to Dr. Mike. so I had that in my mindset. So I had that in my mindset, and I wanted to make sure that I was not the one that was having to shoulder the blame of losing this puzzle. Mm-hmm. Especially I had said, like, I'm not strong at visual or spatial, but nevertheless, I was deemed our puzzler. And so that's why I was more willing to just give a Natalie narrative. However, the reason when Angelina comes to me in the water, and I think it is important to note, she comes to me first. I was her person along with John, but I was her person at Goliath that she liked to bounce ideas off of strategically. Mm-hmm. And I'm so reticent because I'm thinking that it's going to be like the women going, the women plus John or something voting for Natalie. And I'm going to cause a rift with my closest ally, which is Alec, because Alec had such a strong relationship with Jeremy. And so that's why you see me being like, I'm not sure. I'm uncomfortable with this. And then at the end, we leave the water and I'm like, Jeremy is a charmer. Jeremy is more of a threat. As in a, you know, potential long-term threat, if we keep him in the game, than Natalie is. So I agree, I'm game for this. And that's when she then went on and whipped all of the votes. But it was after a very, you know, back and forth, candid discussion between the two of us.
You know, one other thing, just going back in these early stages of the game, we didn't talk about that you participated in that first challenge on the boat where there was a whole selection process of, okay, who are the weakest members of the Davids? But you got picked to be represent with the mayor of Slamtown. You were picked as the second member to represent the Goliaths. How did that selection end up being made? You talk about how you didn't want to be put into any puzzles, but here you are on the boat as being selected as, all right, who are the two strongest players in the game?
So it's funny because when we huddled, like three different people pointed at me. Because at this point I've revealed I'm a doctor. And then you look at me, I'm 5'11". I look athletic. And so you think she's going to be capable enough to get through an athletic portion and she can carry us through some sort of mental portion.
So there's multiple people point at me and I'm like, I don't know, guys. And Natalia pipes in and is like, I could do it too. And so Natalia and I end up rock, paper, scissoring to determine who is the strongest Goliath female.
And you should have thrown it.
Well, so the funny thing is I win and I say, okay, so you're doing it. And she's like, no, that means you're doing it. I was like, wait, I think the winner should choose who, what is happening to herself. And so, but then this is the problem, right? Is that in life, I want to be the leader. I want to be the captain of the team. I want to be I want to call the shots. But in Survivor, that's exactly where you need to just shut it down. And so it's like, I was having to fight the core of my being, which is to stand up and win for my team or my tribe in this scenario. Understanding that, oh gosh, this might send a message. And I do think when we're asking ourselves, why is Allison a threat, which I'm sure we'll get into more, but we should remember that day one, I was chosen as the strongest Goliath female.
Well, that was going to be my next question. That do you feel like that haunted you to some degree, that you were selected in this hero role from the very beginning as along with the mayor of Slamtown as the two of the strongest people in the game?
I do think, I mean, John and I often talked about how we had to sort of protect each other because we had been just immediately identified as threats. I actually say that day one is when potentially Christian also lost the game. So I think, so first, yes, it haunted me because not only did it, it's one thing, I lost that challenge, right? So it's not like, oh wow, her threat level just rose exponentially. It's, I lost that challenge, but then day three, I was the puzzler and the caller, and the way they showed that immunity, it didn't look like I was the leader of the, or I was won that challenge for us, but the perception within the tribe was that I won that challenge for us. So there was a redemption narrative that came along with it. The reason, and I do believe that there was a storyline that was never told of Christian and its algorithms versus little old Allison, but that wasn't relevant to the long landscape of the game. And the reason I say that Christian probably lost the game then is because he was selected. He was endlessly endearing and charming day one, which ingratiated himself to many people. And we all took notice that, oh, when we get to the merge, we got to get rid of that robotic scientist. Big Bang Theory's got to go. But then the other thing is he called attention to how smart he is. I mean, not only did he solve it in the blink of an eye, like I had literally put a block up, he then told us that he wrote algorithms. And everyone fears that a slide puzzle is coming in Survivor. There's inherently a challenge with a slide puzzle. So that somehow created this, oh my God, he's going to win the immunity when the slide puzzle comes to light. We're not going to be able to compete against him in a slide puzzle challenge.
Okay, so now you are going to swap tribes after the Jeremy vote, and you are going to end up on Teva with Dan and with John and also with Christian and with Gabby. And now this is where we're going to lose you a little bit for a couple episodes. So talk about life for you on your swap tribe.
So I call it Dream Team Teva because it was an incredible team. Actually, when we all grabbed our buffs, Jeff sort of asked questions about the team dynamic and everyone was like, well, that's just the new Goliath tribe, because we had the two largest, arguably strongest men, arguably. And then we had me, who was arguably the most
Wonder Woman.
I was Wonder Woman. Yeah, I'll just own that. I love it. And then we have Gabby and Christian, who have been the puzzlers over on the David tribe. So now we have the two strongest men, someone who bridges the gap between puzzling and strength and can fill in either, and then the two puzzlers. So we were basically made in the shade to win almost every challenge. And that is how it played out. I called my life on Teva. I was staying at Hotel Teva. Like, I wasn't playing Survivor. I was sipping tea and watching the sunrise every morning. And I think, I mean, that first, when we first come back, it is hard to be the ones that are having to start over, especially, to be clear, on Goliath, we made three separate shelters because our shelter was such a mess. I think it might be the second worst shelter in Survivor history. But I had already made three shelters, and now I'm with five people, and we're being tasked with making a brand new shelter. And we had one day, essentially, before the evacuation happened, and before the cyclone, to even get our camp slightly shored up. So that in and of itself was a lot of stress and didn't leave a lot of time for
the strategic aspect of Survivor. That was the survival aspect of Survivor. But Tiva, we just all got along. It was really wonderful. And I think that why I really, really was hurt by being invisible in the episode, in the merge or the swap episode, is that the dynamics on Tiva, yes, the brochachos existed and the brochachos are hilarious and so much fun. And that's way better television than what I was giving them. But the actual dynamic on Tiva was that there were the Goliaths and we could go Goliath majority. And then there was one person who extended an olive branch to the Davids, and that was me. And I did it the moment, not the moment, but within the afternoon of us being on Tiva, I said to Gabby and Christian, I said, like, psst, I know it looks like you guys are on the bottom, but I want you to know you're not out of this. And that was like just the little seed that needed to be planted. And then obviously I developed a very strong kindred or kinship to Gabby. And I thank God they showed that, because that relationship means the world to me. But I did have a similarly strong relationship with Christian. And so I felt like on Tiva, if we were to ever go to tribal council, I would have been determining, like, do I do a Dan blindside or do I just go with the flow, stay Goliath strong, and vote out Gabby? And I, in the core of my being, believe that I was ready to make that move on Dan and blindside him with an idol, or actually two, in his pocket. Or in his pants, as you'll let us know.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
So that's very interesting. I think that that's probably the question that people wanted to know, that if you went to that tribal council, so you say that it would have been Dan. Is that like a 60-40?
I would say it was stronger, more likely to be Dan. Because so John and I really were quite close and really were strategically quite well-minded together. The only reason that I would have been hesitant about Dan is what it would have done to my relationship with John. And I think the bigger question that I was actually pondering was, do I tell John or not? My biggest fear, and I was very hesitant to tell the name of Dan, and it took me days and days and days before I ever gave Gabby and Christian a name. And I never gave Christian a name. I gave Gabby a name. I gave Christian the promise of I would be with you. And the reason is that I was fearful that if I said the name too soon, what would happen is the brochachos would then come together and it would be result in Christian going with Dan and John, looping and Gabby. And I would have gone from being the one in the quote driver's seat, which never say that in a confessional. Thankfully, I didn't. But being the one in the driver's seat to being the one that was being blindsided. So I think that I was more worried, though, about John's perception than about, do I blindside Dan?
Was there anything else from this time in the game that you feel like really was going to figure prominently in what was going to take place after the merge?
You know, the five of us got along so well that it's funny because there were promises of we're going to take, it's like the five Tiva, we're going to stay together. And I think one of the funny things is that on the day of the merge, we all say, well, we haven't found the idol out here. None of us realizing that Dan had it. We're like, we should go do an idol search party just as a tribe. And then we can have it for each other. And Dan kept being like, yeah, we don't need to. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? And kept like holding us back at camp, which totally sent a signal to me and Gabby and others, I think, that, oh, maybe Dan has the idol. But it was just funny because that was, I think that the Tiva 5 would have stayed together if it had been the four Tivas and someone other than Dan who plays a very loyal game, and his loyalty belonged with the Goliaths.
Okay. Let's talk about life at the merge for you, Dr. Allison.
Yes.
Okay. So you come into this big merge.
I want to say one thing. I love that you have always called me Dr. Allison. I really appreciate that. Because I think it's interesting that many other male doctors come through Survivor and they are on the show called Dr. Mike and Dr. So-and-so. And a young female physician comes through and she is, of course, monikered by her first name. And of course, I would never ask anyone to call me Dr. Allison because that is really obnoxious. But it meant a lot that you called me Dr. Allison, so thank you.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate it. I mean, it just ended up sticking. There really wasn't any, point I was trying to prove or anything like that. But I think that that Steven credits Officer Sarah when Sari talked about Sarah Lacine and called her Officer Sarah, that was some sort of a turning point where people's job titles tended to stick more.
That's actually true. I love that.
Yeah. All right. So when you come into this merge, you know, we've heard a lot about from the perspective of the Davids at the merge, but we haven't gotten to talk to anybody about their perspective of the Goliaths at this point in the game. At that merge feast, there was that big sign, everything that you need at the merge is right here. And I've only gotten to hear from the Davids about what they were thinking. Was there any talk amongst the Goliaths about, hey, this must mean something?
I'm going to just totally own it right now. I boofed it. Like, because every single time that the Goliaths or Tivo won a reward, I was always like, oh, let me look at the fishing kit. And I'd like take an interest in a fishing hook when I could care less about fishing. Like, I had no interest in what a tackle was. I don't even really know what a tackle is. But I pretended like I was because I was looking for a freaking clue. And then the one time that I like let my guard down and lapse is the one time that there is literally a sign with the answer right in front of me. So no, I did not. I think I looked in my napkin and was like, well, it's not in my napkin. I guess there's no clue at the merge feast.
Okay. So talk to me about the alliance that never was that ends up coming together. Because based on, because in rewatching this, it seems as though you're one of the last people to get involved with this alliance.
Yes. I don't even understand because I, of course, see the game from my perspective. And then in this scenario, sure. I see it as the alliance that was born out of my closest relationships. With Nick being the exception, and here's how it happened from my perspective. At Tiva, I had made the decision that I was blindsiding Dan, I was going with Christian and Gabby, and I wanted to immediately reconnect with Alec and with Mike. And so my perspective, I told Gabby and I told Christian, like, I would love if we had this, insurgency, so to speak, that we kept secret. And I said, no one knows that Alec and I are close. Cause actually Alec and I were very diligent about only talking in the middle of the night. So no one knows how close Alec and I are. So if the two of you, the two of us, we grew up in Mike and then they had given us Nick's name. Like we really like Nick. And I was like, okay, perfect. And then it just so happened that Mike and Nick connected. So it was kind of all the people that I was getting along with best were coming together. And I do see it as like, I floated the idea to Gabby and Christian. And then when the first person that I talked to at the merge is Alec. And what's so funny is with the Natalia blindside, I knew that Alec blindsided her. I did not need him to tell me that he blindsided her. I just knew because he was wary of her going into it. And I thought, wow, this is great for my game. She did not trust me. She was not interested in playing with me. And we've actually talked about it a lot since the game and how she wishes she had. But I knew that Alec had blindsided her. So the reason that he never had backlash is because I was fine with it. I was happy to see Natalia go because she would have been a liability to me at the merge. And I think that I convinced other people of that as well. But that being said, this strike force of six, the alliance that never was, I thought that they were my closest relationships, save for Kara, in the game, and that I could just hover between a Goliath majority and have my strike force when I wanted it. I think that obviously there's problems with that we can get into. But when I did reconnect with Alec, I said, I want you to get to know Gabby and Christian because I really like them and I really want to play this game with them. And so that's perhaps he is seen as the proactive one because I had 9 days of experience with Gabby and Christian. I was already, you know, ride or die with Alec. Mike and I had long since kind of connected and decided we were going to the end of the game together. And in fact, Alec drew on the flag. You know, everyone drew a symbol on the flag. We drew fish or a shark or whatever. Alec drew a triangle with the Roman numeral symbol 3 in it, which is actually a recreation of a tattoo that he has that stands for something else. But he goes to me, this is the final three. This is you, me, and Mike. And that's the sort of thing. I mean, if we had made it to the final three, it's making it in there. That's the sort of thing that I was also like, well, it's a long road. Let's see. But I think it just shows that really we were very connected at that point in time. And I was approaching it. Those were the people I was closest to. And And so I had kind of said, please get to know them. And I wanted to get to know Nick. And I kind of used Mike as my medium to get to know Nick. That was how that episode and the relationships I was working on played out at the merge.
But Allison, it's not going to work out.
It's not. And here's why. Because number one, the people that I've chosen to have in my Goliath insurgency were the people that were obvious, like potential winners, like had a potential winner on them in the form of Christian, most notably, but obviously Nick. And then
so you picked the wrong Davids.
I picked the wrong Davids. I should have picked some pathetic sniveling Davids, which none of them exist, but I should have picked, you know, not this person who was endlessly charming the way that Christian is. I should have picked someone that seemed less obvious. And especially the moment that what was so complicated is I did want it to be the Goliaths for two votes. Mm-hmm. And I said that to them, but I didn't realize, you know, the extent to which I was toying with them. And this is a problem with where my game, you know, falls apart. But I wanted to have my cake and eat it too. I wanted to have my Goliath majority that I was going to happily pick off when I chose without making the move with them. And that is exactly the problem, is that I led them on for too long. And the problem is that if we had a different, if we didn't have Christian in the fold, I would have been more, it was really hard protecting him. And actually, when we talk about those seven Goliaths going down to the beach and all of us strolling on the beach together, which is funny, it's like funny to watch back, but we have that conversation where Angelina pitches Christian. And right. I remember walking away from it and being like, Alec, fuck. Sorry if you got to edit that out, but
like, if you're cool with it, we can leave it.
I'm fine with it. I was like, what do we do now? This is the person that's part of our strike force. We can't vote for our strike force. And so we come back to the beach and, very artfully, I'm like convincing Dan that he and Christian are brochachos and Christian is feeding him information. We have a pipeline to the minds of the Davids and it's via Dan and Christian. And so I like, at this point, Dan is convinced that he and Christian are best friends, which they had a good relationship. I'm not discounting that, but I've blown it up to be this like magical thing. And then I'm actually like, oh, and don't you think Elizabeth is so unpredictable? Which actually, I love Elizabeth. I wish that we had not used Elizabeth as our sacrificial lamb, because I think that Elizabeth would have been totally down to play the game with me. And if only we had kept her around. But the merge was very similar to the first vote in that it's an anyone but me mentality. And more to the point is that I needed to be anyone but me and anyone but anyone not in my strike force or in the strike force, because I don't take full ownership of that. And so that scene where they show the four of us, that being John, Dan, myself, and Alex sitting on the beach, that was a really difficult game that I was playing, where I was like, I didn't want it to be Christian. But I couldn't outright say that it shouldn't be Christian. I had to convince someone else why it couldn't be Christian. And then I had to make that person be the one that was going to face the heat from the other Goliaths, and namely face the heat from Angelina.
Now, was this alliance real? Because in talking with, Christian and Gabby and Nick had said to me he was surprised that this was even in the episode, that in his mind it was such a nothing thing that he was really surprised in terms of what a big deal it turned out to be in the show and talking about the season. And obviously Gabby is going to feel like it's not real at all, because she's going to be so upset at that tribal council in terms of Elizabeth going home and, you know, how Elizabeth is being treated. So in your mind, was this a real thing, a viable alliance?
100% it was real. 100% those were the people that I wanted to play with. I think that there were a lot of areas where things fall apart. I think one of them was, in some sense, Gabby at that tribal and spooking Mike, and then Mike deciding then and there that he said to me, we have the golden ticket with the Goliaths. We have a Goliath majority. We need to just stay Goliath strong. And because they've downplayed my relationship with Mike, the impact of that, where at this point in the game, this was the first time he had an ask of me, it had so much more of a resounding impact than if he was continually asking me to do this, asking me to do that. But it came from someone who I really respected. And obviously, I thought of Mike as my closest ally outside of Alec at this point in time. So I'm going to listen with perked up ears. And actually, so yes, the alliance was real. I'm surprised it was included in the episode because it was an alliance that never was. It never voted together. So that's why it was funny to me. But not because I, like, if we looked at confessionals, I had every intention of voting with them. At least at that merge episode, not at the merge, but for the next episode. My mindset at the merge was we do one David and then, and honestly, I said two Davids, but it was always going to be, we'll have this six and we're going to make it to the final six and no one's going to know about it. So how perfect is that? But I kind of touched upon another point that I wanted to brush on, which is the idea that at the merge boot, Angelina floats out the idea of Christian. And then at the next episode, Mike is the one that has rallied the Goliaths to vote out, to vote for Christian. And I want to briefly just say, I know that there was a confessional in which Angelina spoke about how it's interesting that when a woman gives an idea, it's sort of ignored. And when a man gives that same idea, everyone starts to listen up. And I think it's beautiful that that was included. The reason why I felt like that it was not quite the perfect example of that is that, number one, 3 days had passed in Survivor, which is an eon. Number two, it was a different delivery. There was a pathos when Mike pleaded to the Goliaths. He had tears in his eyes. He talked about this emotional journey that he had gone on and this experience with his father that was related to snorkeling. And he was just reminded of that fact and talked about the loved one's visit in context of all that. Whereas we had the military language, which to a bunch of Goliaths who think of themselves as the leader, perhaps is not the best way. And then number three is that it comes down to the relationships at this point in the game. And obviously, Angelina and I had a working relationship, but Mike and I, he was my number two in command, so to speak. And so it was very different. Even though it was the same name, the message and the delivery of the message and the timing of the message were all different. So I don't think it's the perfect example, though I'm glad that that narrative could even be pushed forth.
Okay. But this is going to be an important inflection point in your game this round, yes. I feel like, because not only did you win the immunity, which you're very excited about, and I asked you about this in the exit interview, and you said you felt like that it did hurt you to win that first immunity challenge. But at that tribal council, you are going to be, I think, pretty confrontational with Angelina, at least based on what I saw from the television show. And it does seem like that is going to impact your relationship moving forward. Now, was that the case or was the relationship already strained at that point?
The relationship was not strained at that point. And I actually think that it does not become strained until the next episode. In truth, between me just mic dropping jury management, I also am
not going Mike White, right?
Not Mike White, yeah. I also am kind of patting Angelina's back saying, you're fine, it's okay, you're fine. And so she is pleading with all the Goliaths, like, don't flip on me, don't flip on me. And I'm like comforting her while also, like, I don't think she realized the extent to which those two words really did destroy a lot of her game. In the moment, she didn't realize it. I think later on, she recognizes it. But in the moment, I think that she was very panicked about the potential of being voted out, that she couldn't appreciate what felt like, truly, it was clinical. It was clerical. I didn't say anything really about her character. I just said my kind of take, my analysis on the situation.
Okay.
So I don't think this is quite the point that Angelina is she built a vendetta against me. I think that does come at the next episode. But I wanted to cycle to the immunity for a second because I wanted to add one thing that I'm trying to give the pieces of why I was a threat, because I know that's a question that many people have. And it's a question that, I feel like weirdly defensive about, but winning that first immunity was part of it. But also, and this didn't make it, I got a standing ovation practically. I mean, I got like an uproarious applause from the whole entire group. And I think that
And there was a moment where Jeff said, why are you guys applauding? You're all about to be like on the chopping block. You shouldn't be happy for her. And I think it wasn't just the response, but it was that then Jeff called attention to the fact that so many people were supportive of me at that point in time that like amplified what an immunity win can do in terms of threat level.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the next round of play where now Elizabeth is gone, but this is going to be the first of two really big blindsides back to back where the mayor of Slamtown is ultimately going to go home when Davey is going to play his idol on Christian. Now, this is when the strike force is really going to not come together. Mike wants to, you know, pull the ripcord on being a part of it. And this is where, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the Goliaths are off having their own conversations, but we never really were privy to exactly what was being discussed at those big Goliath meetings.
I mean, what's funny is, yes, there were big Goliath meetings, which I think was just poor optics. But I also felt like there were many side conversations, if you will, that I had one-on-one with the Davids. And I felt like those were of more importance to me than these massive meetings. But the main one that happened, and truthfully, it was the one where Mike makes the plea as to why it should be Christian. And like I said, because it was coming from someone that I was so close with, and because it was his first ask of me, this is where my heart changes in terms of the strike force. And this is where I recognize that, oh my God, this strike force, they're all the reason that I want to be like playing the game with them is because I like them so much. And they're Survivor super fans like me. So we connect on that level. But we're all like, for that reason, I'm choosing the most strategic people to play the game with. And that is not wise. You want to choose some of the less strategic people to play the game with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. Do you feel like, though, that it's too early to worry about in terms of who you can beat at the end?
Oh, yeah, I think it's absolutely too early to worry about. So I think this gets into why people were very fixated on Christian, why the people become fixated on me and a little bit of Davey as well. And recall that the last episode we had seen in totality was HHH. And I call it the Ben Dreebergen effect, which is to say they failed to take out Ben at 7. He idles his way through to a Final Four fire-making twist. And with that, they, you know, he wins the game. And so I think that because that was the season most fresh in our mind, everyone was fixated on potential threats, not imminent threats, potential threats to win the game by nebulous features such as being likable, such as being smart, whether that's because you're a robotics engineer or you're a doctor, such as like a single immunity win. So I think that, yes, you're right. This is way too early to start worrying about that because there's so much game left to play. And in the 37th iteration, I think that like these moves that you make are much more important, especially moves later on than what you do at the first merge boot. Mm-hmm. But I think that all of the psychological effect of seeing Ben go get from 8 all the way to winning was profound. And therefore everyone's like, no, we got to act now. We got to act sooner. We got to act sooner.
If you had to really, you know, put your finger on what that Ben Dreebergen effect is, because I think that this is fun to talk about, is it not so much like a Joey Amazing of, oh, he's going to win all of the challenges? I mean, that Ben found idols, but it doesn't seem like that's necessarily a concern yet, that, you know, idols aren't really a big deal in the game yet at this point. Is it more of a factor of who, if they get to the end, has, you know, a great chance to win with the jury, and we have to be really laser focused on that person?
Exactly right. So it is not necessarily like he's just going to immunity his way in. And it's not even, oh, Christian's going to idol his way in. It's just, if you don't take the shot when you have the shot, then you're going to be the one that looks like an idiot for letting that person get to the end. And so I think that Christian represented that person. I think at some point I sort of represent that person. And so it is more about, it's not even concrete threat. It's just, that's why I'm using it's a nebulous threat that I'm ascribing the Ben Dreebergen effect to be.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that in terms of, you know, taking, you know, the shot and some or sort of like by, you know, hell or high water, getting the target out, even if it's like at the risk of your own game versus having a shot to plead your case in front of the jury? Because I know that the conventional wisdom at this point in time is like, hey, you got to make your move and you got to take out that person because, you know, you got to make sure that that person doesn't get to the end. You know, the kind of stuff that you're talking about. But I kind of feel like that as somebody who got very close to the end, like I would give anything to have had a shot to, you know, make my case at the end and say, oh, you'll be a zero vote finalist. I who cares? At least I had a shot to do it in the end.
I don't know. I think speaking to that, I'm actually really like take a lot of pride in being the person that was the last one voted out of the game because I get to take comfort in the fact that, like, who knows what would have happened? Maybe if I'd had the shot, I would have won this game. And there's no real way of knowing that because so much depends upon the end. But I guess to your point, I think the bigger point is it smart to just take the shot or is it smart to do what's best for you? And this might have been a scenario where I thought what was best for me was taking out Christian, when in actuality, probably what was best for me was working with the strike force. Here's the thing though, is I don't actually necessarily believe that to be the case because one of the mm-hmm. things by sticking with the Goliaths is that we did have the Davids had the magic bag of tricks full of immunities and so many advantages. And so by forcing them to use them early on, that meant they weren't getting to have a vote steal at final six or all these things that would have been even more powerful that late in the game. And the other thing is that at that point in time, where I was sitting with the Goliaths was in a really good spot. And so it just, I could not understand when I had tight relationships with so many Goliaths, like flipping and burning half of those bridges to work with the strike force. I do think though that because I flirted with the strike force for so long and failed to deliver, I inadvertently burned some bridges on that side. But to the John Blind side, oh my God, was that not the best tribal council ever?
Well, you tell me, I wasn't there.
It was insane. Like to be a part of that as a fan, I remember just nerding out like while John's torch is being snuffed, being like, holy shit, was that incredible? Was that me? Was that incredible? And it was incredible. Like, and I immediately just took on that role, especially with Davey and Nick being like, mad props. Like as a fan, whoa, that was great. Like I'm also like, oh shit, what do I do now? But mad props, guys. Like I'm gonna give it up to you.
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing tribal council. I remember just being there watching the episode and then at the point where, you know, all of the votes are nullified against Christian and then the votes are nullified against Angelina. I'm like, I have no idea what is going to happen. Yeah. And I think that is rare where we're at a tribal council and I'm like, is it between this person or this person? You know, you sort of like figure out it sounds like two people, like it could be one of 10 people right now.
Right. And I think that in that moment, I was like, oh my God, it could be me.
Or nine, guys, an immunity necklace.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry, you know, somebody's counting is going to tweet me.
He's going to make sure to correct you on that one. So good save. But no, in the moment when once, so what's funny too, is that actually, and they showed this, is before that tribal council, Dan says, do I play my idol for Angelina? And at this point in time, it really did feel like Dan and Angelina were the two butting heads. You know, Dan took the heat for changing the vote from Elizabeth or from Christian to Elizabeth at Elizabeth's boot in terms of the upset that Angelina had at it. And I do think that there's, you know, Dan being from the South, he can sometimes couch language that sounds a little bit like he calls everyone darling and sweetie. And for someone like Angelina, who is really strong and independent, those words come across as patronizing. So the point being, the two of them, it felt like we're butting heads. And it was like, no, you don't play the idol for Angelina. Like we have an extra number, like because of we got rid of one David at the merge. We need that idol for later. So it's sort of fascinating to even watch. I was next to Dan when Angelina took back and looked back and those puppy dog eyes. And he is just wondering what he's supposed to do. And I mean, So that was just interesting to witness as well. But certainly there was so much uncertainty, and it was that tribal council that was really my wake-up call, because up until this point in the game, I've gone to one tribal with the Goliaths where it was a unanimous vote. I spent 11 days on Teva sipping tea and having a great time with four awesome people. And then I went to the merge tribal where, number one, again, a unanimous vote. But secondly, I was immune. So this is the first tribal where there's any degree of unsafety or lack of safety. And so that was my wake-up call. I was like, wow, this game is elevated. I better wake up and stop living at Hotel Teva and play this game of Survivor, which, of course, I had been playing the game, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Now, you said that it wasn't the last tribal council that really strained your relationship with Angelina. It was this round that really caused a strain on your relationship. But what happened?
No. So not I misspoke. Not even this round. It is the next round.
Next round. Really, okay. All right. So the Dan vote. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Because I was continually coming back to camp. And so I think the result of John leaving the game is that Angelina, that was Angelina's closest person within the Goliath Alliance. And so there was a vacuum for who is going to be Angelina's closest person. And because she and I did have a good relationship at this point, and because the jury management kind of fell off of her in her angst about what Elizabeth was doing, swinging for the fences and putting her name out there, I was the person that filled that vacuum for her for several days post-merge. And that was by design. Even though I didn't feel as close to her, I wanted her to feel like I was her person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when the votes were canceled on Christian and then were canceled on Angelina, did you have any sense of who the votes were going to be for? And did you think it was going to be you?
Oh, I certainly thought there was a possibility of it being me.
Checking your pulse?
I at that point, no, because every time I check my pulse is actually when I know with 100% certainty that my name is being written down. So at this point, there was no certainty, and I hadn't yet apparently developed that weird tick.
Okay. It was still in development. Okay. All right. So now we're going to see now perhaps another bite at the apple for the Strike Force, because we're going to see after this tribal council where John went home, Dan is going to be off, some might say sulking, and you are huddled up with some of your tightest allies talking about what's the move going forward.
So here's what I've realized is that Mike, at this point in the game, was the one who decided, you know, we have the golden ticket. Let's stay with the Goliath. And I'm realizing that, oh my gosh, I failed to act. And did I miss my opportunity? And so in my mind, I come to Christian, to Gabby, to Nick, and more so, I always spoke kind of through Christian and Gabby. And I said, I know the Strike Force, or I know that first six didn't work out, but can we have a mirror alliance? And God, what are these names? But I say, you know, instead of Mike, can we swap in Kara? Because I think the thing is, Kara and I were really close at Goliath. And then when the merge hit, she sort of went back to Dan at first. And I said, she and I hash it out. And I say, I feel like I lost you. I lost you somewhere along the way. And she's like, no, never. I'm with you. And so it wasn't until we had to reconnect a couple of days after the merge. But so then I'm like, okay, I'm with Kara. Kara and Alec are now good, because Kara felt hurt by the vulnerability of Alec blindsiding Natalia. And I thought, so these are the people I want to work with. But can we still have this Strike Force? And was it too late? Did I fail to act, you know, soon and early enough? So I come to Christian, I say, okay, this is our mirror alliance. You're a doctor, I'm a doctor, so we mirror each other. This is so lame. I'm so sorry. And then I say, like, okay.
I thought the mirror alliance was just going to be, it's like a backup without Mike White, but okay, I'm here for it. Go ahead. Continue on with the mirror alliance.
And then I'm like, okay. And then we have Alec and Nick, and they're two very charming guys from two different walks of life. So they mirror each other in that way. And then my metaphor like starts to get really hazy. And I'm like, and we have Kara and Gabby, both of whom I adore and love and cherish. And I'm like, and they're both women, so my metaphor doesn't really stand up. But that's our mirror, so why don't we do that? But anyways, to pause on the mirror alliance. I want to talk
about.
Yeah, when we come back from that epic tribal, I mean, obviously, Kara and Alec and I reconnect, and I'm thinking like, okay, let's run through all of the scenarios. And I literally sit there like a game bot, and I'm like, what if they have a vote steal? What if they have a a vote steal that you only reveal in the confessional? What if an extra vote, so we wouldn't know about that. And then I say, what if there's an advantage that never happened? And I say, remember day one, Jeff said not who has the advantage, but what is the advantage? And I say, there's a new advantage in this game. I don't know what it is, but there's a new advantage.
Wow, you figured it out?
I mean, I didn't figure out that there was an idol nullifier by any means, but I was definitely, those words stood out to me on the barge because there was just such an emphatic nature with which Jeff spoke them. And so then when I was reeling from this tribal council being like, those wily little Davids, they are so sneaky. And I had to come up with everything that could have been in their magic bag of tricks. And that was one of the things I was like, there's an advantage out there that we cannot account for. So let's talk through the scenarios and account for everything else.
Okay. The Mirror Alliance is talked about here. And we see, you know, Kara is talking about how, hey, we should maybe take out Dan because he has the idol. But why doesn't this work here? It seems like that you guys are on board. Is it that the Davids are more interested in their own thing because of all the advantages they have? Because it seems like that Nick is getting really annoyed during this episode that you guys keep going and having these meetings.
So there was one meeting and it was very inadvertent because Kara, Alec and I were talking on the raft, and then Angelina comes back from her, you know, confessional. And at that same time, Dan's like, why am I being excluded from the conversation? So it was very unfortunate, the timing of that all. But all that is to say, I go back to chicken and egg. And was it that Nick got spooked because he saw all the Goliaths together? Or did I get spooked because I felt like Nick didn't trust me? And so I can't really know which happened first. But from my perspective, I felt as if when Carl and Nick in particular were talking to me, they were talking about including me for one vote. And there was no future that was ever really played out where I existed in their game. And really, this is true for Carl, but to some extent for Nick as well. And so it felt like, why am I, you know, going to make this big move? Which again, like I'm in a good spot within the Goliaths. They don't even want to play with me. They just want me to be their vote for one time. And I think. I think that like just had me on edge. And I think a lot of important things happen here where I, like Gabby and I were so close. And so I wanted to be playing the game with Gabby and I wanted to figure out how to do that. But I didn't really trust that if I moved over to the good side, as it's of course framed.
Not the good place.
Not importantly, not the good place and definitely not the bad place. But I was afraid that it was like I was going to be the one who flipped, and then the next time I was going to be the one that was facing the repercussions of flipping.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you guys end up really getting caught in the medium place when we see what's going to happen, because we don't really get to know what you guys were going to do, because here comes Nick and he is going to steal your vote, which is a big surprise to you.
I didn't expect that.
You did not expect that. Nobody did. And so here comes Nick. He's going to steal your vote. And then Kara and Alec, they are still going to vote. They are going to vote for Angelina here. But hopefully you can give us some clarity today and tell us what were you guys planning going into that tribal council?
So first, I will say that originally when the Davids, I'll just use that term, propositioned like to have us vote with them, they originally said, well, we want Dan, let's vote out Dan. And then me, and at this point I am going to be voted, like I am with the Davids, I say, okay, but we just saw an epic idol play, And I know that I do know that Dan has an idol. And I'm like, what do we, I don't want to say Dan has an idol to them. But I'm like, how are we going to prepare for the possibility of an idol? And I'm the one that I think is brilliant. I'm like, we need to split the votes so we can put, you know, and I tell them, why don't we put four of the votes on Dan and four on Angelina? And then we're made in the shade. And that, I didn't realize how that was perceived by Gabby and others as like, I was trying to weaken the number of votes that the Davids were putting against someone, which genuinely at that point in time, I was game to play with them. And that's why I even came up with the split vote. So it's funny because I think that split vote ended up being so catastrophic and this really becomes the inflection point. Mm-hmm. But, I wish, but I thought at the time, wow, I'm such a mastermind accounting for every idol under the sun. And truthfully, I was like willing to lose either Dan or Angelina at that point in time. I was ready to have either one of them go home. And I think about 30 minutes before tribal, I felt really anxious about the idea of all of a sudden I just got wary that the Davids were up to something. And so I, Kara, Alec, and I retreated to the forest and we're sitting like on the perimeter of the forest, not visible to anyone, having a like conversation. Do we do this? Do we not? And Kara is definitely ready to make the move. Like in, I would 100% say Kara is ready to vote out Dan. Alec was more hesitant with me. And I was the one at this time voicing my concerns and Angelina stumbled up on us and I was like, she was sort of like, what are you guys talking about out here? We're like, nothing, mm-hmm. nothing to alarm you at all. And, but I think that we left that conversation with the intent that we would have, we were going to write down, I guess it was Christian. Of course it was Christian's name. Mm-hmm. Christian's name. We were not going to go with any form of David's, any form of a Amir alliance. We were going to stick with the Goliaths. And that was the plan going into it. So obviously the sneaky little Davids and Nick in particular that was right in being wary. And I'm like,
because you still had 6-5 at this point. It was still 6 Goliaths to the 5 Davids.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. But we also talked about, we said, this is our contingency plan. If there is a steal vote and it gets played before the votes are cast, then what we will do is we will at that time vote for Angelina. So we had our plan.
Oh wow! This was the contingency plan. It wasn't on the fly.
No, it was not on the fly. It was discussed. So that we were voting for Christian, but if any steal vote happens, we vote for Angelina to show good faith to the Davids.
Okay. All right. And then ultimately, the idol nullifier is played. What was your reaction to seeing that?
Ding.
Bing.
I know, but I'm the one that keeps like pushing the narrative of ding because on the island I heard ding and now I can't unhear ding, but apparently it's bing and it's a whole joke between Carl and I. But no, my reaction to the idol nullifier, perfect. There it is, a bing. But was not, I mean, surprised, but also not surprised because I knew there was an advantage that I couldn't account for. And I was like, oh, well, this is it. What is this? Tell me more. And also when Jeff went, you know, typically he reads here, he says like, this is a hidden immunity idol and he votes cast will not count. And this time he said, this is a hidden immunity idol. And then there was such a delay as he was like reaching in to get the idol nullifier. So I was like, what's going on right now? Like something's going on. And so I was surprised to just find out what it was that I couldn't anticipate, but not totally stunned to find out that there was something additional added to the 37th season of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And truthfully, I'm walking away thinking like, okay, well, we did what we said we were going to do, Nick et al. We voted Angelina. So, you know, we proved ourselves. But of course, that's why the steal vote was so problematic.
Nick at all. I thought for a second you were saying that he's like a survivor know-it-all.
Oh, that he could be. he knows a lot. And he is a patron, as we well know.
Yeah. So he knows how to win the game, unlike me and Steven.
Yeah, and that excludes him from being a know-it-all, I guess.
That's why he's a Nick-it-all.
Sorry. No, I was using
Nick and Company. Got it.
Yeah. And so here I am coming back from that tribal thinking like, okay, now I'm in good with the date. Like, I know I didn't vote. And truthfully, I was so, obviously it shows how stunned I was to have my vote taken. And the reason for that is within the Goliaths, I felt like I was the one that was having a lot of conversations with so many of the Davids. And because like when I was having those conversations, I joke that I never lied out there. And it's because at that moment when someone was presenting an idea, that was the best idea. And I was gung ho. And so I was being genuine when I was like, I'm getting down for this. But my heart would change, you know, and my brain would change an hour later. And so that would be my lie. But that's why I was so stunned, is that I thought, oh, I thought we were working together. And clearly you don't think that at all. And in that moment, for a brief split second, I was like, I'm going home. This is how I go home. This is the end for me.
Right. Okay. Because typically what we see is you take somebody's vote away and then you vote for them.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And I think there is nothing more castrating in Survivor than having your, right? A medical term, but than having your vote stolen. I got to give Dr. Mike some love, you know? but no, then having your vote stolen, like I felt disenfranchised in that moment because I was disenfranchised. And it was really had a profound effect on Nick and my relationship moving forward, in that there was a relationship early merge and later merge. It is all just smoke and mirrors and blowing smoke up each other's asses.
Wow. That was a very graphic 90 seconds on the podcast. Okay.
You wouldn't expect that from your doctor, but as I always say, the human body is very clinical. Yes. Yeah. So these are clinical terms I'm using.
Yes. Okay. Did you feel like that you had dodged a bullet in some way, in that you did not have to vote at that tribal council where things were going haywire?
You know, if I was playing the game better than I did at this moment, yes, that is exactly how I should have responded. But when we come back to the beach, because I wanted to convince the Davids that I was sincere with them, I also wanted to stand in Kara and Alex's corner. And I wanted them to know that I would have been with them in this scenario, because I would have if my vote was not stolen. And this is, I think, one of the problems that I have reflected on as being a mistake in my game. So the first mistake being flirting with the Davids for too long. The second mistake was calling Angelina to her face a contingency plan. And this, to me, is exactly the moment that drives her into the arms of the Davids. And I mean, I had a confessional that I don't know why I was cut, because I thought it was clever, but I said, hell hath no fury, like an Angelina scorned.
Yeah.
And truthfully, that is then becomes the case. And I think that obviously there's a lot of Angelina versus Allison, Angelina and Allison, that we do see in the season, and especially later in the season. But I think that if they had really played how like-minded we were on Goliath, that would have been a great theme, especially in a season where women in Survivor is a narrative that is being pushed.
It's interesting, the you versus Angelina rivalry that's going to start to play out to some degree here, because this move, yeah, it does end up pushing her into the arms of the Davids, but in the same way, it ends up pushing Gabby out of the Davids, which ultimately sends her and ultimately Christian into a relationship that they are going to finally get to vote with you when it gets to the Carl vote in a couple of episodes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, it's funny because I regret calling her contingency plan. Obviously, I can understand that she was quite hurt by those terms. And again, I felt like those were clinical strategic terms and not any emotional terms that I was using. But she's felt vulnerable for several episodes or several tribal councils now to some extent. It's been she's been in the crosshairs to some extent. And so I can see how explosive and hurtful those two words could have been. And you're right that the aftermath that I didn't appreciate fully, but does work out to my advantage, is that it's almost a swap. If the Davids had sort of decided to stay together and keep Angelina as their extra number, in addition to making sure to keep Gabby in the fold, than it really would have been catastrophic for me. But fortunately, there was alienation of Gabby. And fortunately, Gabby and I had such a strong friendship and strategic bond that at least I could rely back on that in a few votes.
Okay. This next round is going to ultimately be the unanimous vote of Alec. Now, you and I only had one interaction during the course of the season, and that message came after this episode where you felt like that I was not giving enough attention to the blind side, or not the blind side, but the vote out of Alec here, and what a big point this was in the game. And so I would love to hear you tell me about your decision to turn against Alec here.
Yes. So like I have said, Alec was my day one ride or die. And that was so intentional on my part. Number one, I know the surfer boy archetype does habitually quite well. Number two, I figured he could be my physical meat shield, that would help me protect me along the way. But number three was that, wow, did he just give off the best possible vibes? And were we just too kind of funny? We're so opposite in so many regards, but we were so like-minded in our approach to Survivor to some extent that we really complemented each other nicely. But so to speak to the Alec vote out, this was crushing for me. This broke my heart. There was a confessional, a secret scene of me like in tears because I am losing my best friend in the game. And I think that why I was particularly upset is that it looks like the Goliaths sort of just roll over and are all ready to write Alec's name down. And I think here's the thing. Okay, I'm very principled. In general, I'm a principled person and it can be annoying. And so I apologize for that. But I am particularly principled when it comes to Survivor. And one of my principles is that I am here to experience everything. And I'm going on a tangent, so stay with me. I'm here to experience everything that I can soak out of Survivor. And what that also means is participating in challenges. And the Alec immunity challenge, obviously the one that Christian spectacularly wins, that challenge is one, the eat or play, whatever challenge. And we see three people sit out in the form of Carl, Angelina, and Nick. And at this point in time, the rewards have only gone to, and we're overlooking the very important vomiting and wraps. but the Carl and Angelina have both not gone on a reward yet. And then, I mean, Nick had gone on a reward, but felt comfortable enough sitting out. And I think most importantly, I was quite disappointed in Angelina's decision to eat nachos rather than play. And the reason for that is she was being fed to me as the person that everyone is just going to vote for. And I was like, oh, it's very curious that she is comfortable enough to sit out of a challenge when she is this vote that I'm supposed to believe everyone's just going to write down Angelina's name. And so I think that was part of it. But then I think there's this second thing of, oh my gosh, what a glorious effort was just given. And I could only appreciate, as a competitor, how much heart and soul went into the people that stood on that beam. And like we talk about, yeah, Gabby stood there for 2.5 hours. Gabby would win in any other season. The same is actually true of me. I doubled or tripled the record. But that doesn't matter because guess what? Alec, and then more importantly, Christian, sat there for 6 hours and gave everything that their body had, like to the extent that truthfully, Alec's body was two different colors. And so as a person who honors this game and is too principled, because I recognize that there's actually very many strategic reasons to sit out of a challenge. But I couldn't rectify my principles, especially in the face of my closest ally, with this idea that I felt like there needed to be poetic justice. And Carl set out of the challenge, and wouldn't it be great? Carl was a name we were contemplating. Wouldn't it be great if it was such poetic justice that he sat out and then he was blindsided? But of course, that's not what happens. And I think more to the point is so much was left out of how hard I worked to save Alec. And I think that this laid the foundation for why Christian and Gabby do side with me. Obviously, this is my telling of events, and it was cool to see that their plan was a pendulum swing. But from my telling, I had been connecting with these, with Christian and Gabby from day 11 onward. We had a true bond. Like there's so much mutual respect, so much mutual love that I thought that I felt as if I could rely upon that. And I came to Christian, and I, this where I aired is focusing more on Christian than Gabby, but I came to Christian and I made an impassioned plea. And I said to him, use me as a cautionary tale of what it looks like to not make the move soon enough. And he said in his interview that this was, or he later tweeted, like this was a highly effective moment. And he really, really almost considered, you know, voting with us, voting out Carl and saving Alec. And I think my problem is that I assume Gabby would have been on board with me if we could convince Christian, and I should have tended more to why is this move good for Gabby as well. And I think that was actually my strategy, like taking another step back going into it. So I did read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And yeah. I tried to continually think about how do I present my idea, but convince the other person that it's what's right for them. And there was one person that I really focused on whenever I was presenting a strategic idea and trying to make sure that he thought it was his agenda and not mine. And that was Christian. And I should have done that more with Gabby as well in this moment in particular, is prove to her why it would make sense to save Alec now rather than voting out Alec. And we almost had, because we would have had me, Kara, Alec, Gabby, and Christian at that point. And I can't remember whether or not I talked to Mike about it. I'm blanking, but we must have. Yeah. And we would have had Mike. And so we would have had the votes, and it all sort of hinged upon where Gabby and Christian's heart and their brain resided.
When I talked to Gabby, I asked her about what was going on with the wraps. Why didn't Gabby get sick about the wraps? And Gabby had a theory that you drank way too much pineapple juice. She thinks that the wraps were fine. It was the pineapple juice that was your problem.
You know, I have thought long and hard about this, and I told her on the island, I was like, maybe it was all the juice, because I definitely had three juices, and I don't drink sugary beverages almost ever. And so just to have like or the coffee. Sugar load, or yeah, apparently all I drink is water. I think that the sugar load maybe had an effect on the volume in my body and my tiny stomach at that point in time. But the other thing that's interesting is that Alec and I were the only two that ate the romaine lettuce in the Caesar salad. Mm. And we all know that the CDC recently recalled some romaine lettuce. So I don't know if that the CDC really has domain in Fiji, but it is suspicious. I will say this, because I don't think that this was overindulgence. And the reason for that is I was feverish and I had hashtag severe gastrointestinal distress. I'm looking at you, Fishback. But because I had coming out of both ends and because of the fever component, like I was rigoring. And when someone is rigoring, there is a systemic toxin in their body. Mm-hmm. You would think if it was overindulgence, I vomit once and I feel fine. Okay. And that was not the case. And Dr. Joe also treated me with an antibiotic. So even though it was I believe it was a viral pathogen. I think he thought it was a viral pathogen. To be clear, we don't prescribe antibiotics willy-nilly, but in the game of Survivor, it was worth throwing an antibiotic on there. Just have to put a plug in for antibiotic stewardship.
Okay. All right. I think I got most of what you're putting down there, but let's move on to talking about
the doctors that are listening to this podcast. Yes. It's a very small subset, an hour and 45 in.
Okay. To our medical professionals out there in the audience, which yes. is, we have some, we have a few. All right.
Yeah. So, Dr. Mike.
Well, look, you know, it would be very flattering if Dr. Mike was 2 hours into your Survivor deep dive. I can't promise that he's here. Right.
I thought you were going to say it'd be very flattering to call him a professional because that's awesome.
No, of course, I'm very much a professional.
Okay. No, him, Dr. Mike, not you. Obviously,
yes.
You are.
Yeah, so obviously I am. Yes, that goes without saying. Okay, so let's talk about Carl. All right, this is a big, this is a really big swing in the game, because now the Davids now have the advantage. They have the 5-4 advantage. And the way that we ultimately end up seeing it is that it looks like the germ of this idea starts with Gabby, who then is talking with you, and then ultimately with Christian and Kara and Mike. Is that how you remember these events happening?
No. And so it was very interesting that that episode was told from Gabby's perspective. Actually, when I thought about it, I thought, this is the episode that I get the fishy. Like, I'm going to get the fishy at the Carl Blind side. And it all comes down to, like, who takes credit for a move? And I think that Gabby really articulated it well in her retrospective with you, that any given move from can be any person's credit to take. There are some people that are seen as the drivers of the move, and there are some people that are seen as part, like, secondary in the move. And because I had made the plea and I had said Carl's name at the Alec boot, that is why it felt like I was in the game shifting the narrative. I also recognize, though, that Gabby and Christian, the reason we chose Carl even as a target when Alec and Kara and I were talking it over was because we could sense that there was a tension between Carl and Gabby in particular. And so it seemed like the logical choice. Like, we weren't going to convince them to vote out someone that they got along with, but if we could convince them to vote out someone that they were wary of, then it was the right target. So that it was so interesting, because I think in the game, you know, this move and was credited to two people more so than to Gabby. And I'm not discrediting, I think Gabby was instrumental in this move. But in the game, and like she articulated, is after the Carl blindside, Christian went on what Mike and I call an apology tour, and was needing to give forgiveness to all the other Davids for blindsiding them. And that's because they were mad at Christian, and they did not see this as something that Gabby did. But they were mad at Christian. And then there was also the perception of Allison pulled this off. And I think when I reached out to you, I kind of talked about how this Carl blindside, and the reason I thought of it as my move, because I use pure social capital. Nothing, there were no idols, there were no advantages, pure social capital to convince the people to vote with me when it mattered most. And these were my four closest relationships in the game. And I relied on them, and I used powers of persuasion, and I used kind of old survivor strategy, which is purely social politics, to have these people come to my favor and come to my aid when I needed it most. And that, I think that there was some degree in the game of credit to me for this move.
Okay. That in the actual island of Fiji, but not in the television show.
In the island of Fiji, it was perceived as kind of Christian's move, my move, and to a lesser extent, Gabby's move. I do think if Gabby had made it to the end, she would have been able to articulate why this was her move. And I think that's why calling something someone's move is so fraught, is because it all depends on who gets to tell their narrative at Final Tribal Council. But yes, in the physical island of Fiji and not in the retelling, that was the perspective that many people are operating under.
Allison, you also get four votes here. Did you know the votes were coming for you that night?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Okay. I knew that the moment the reason I fought so hard for Alec is because I knew that once Alec was gone, I mean, we've gotten rid of the pure physical forces, meaning like, There's so much more than that, but you look at John, you look at Alec, it was just an immunity stud, and you look at Nan, I mean, these are three hulking Goliaths in physical form, and I was the next tallest one, whether or not that means I was the next most athletic, I mean, we could talk about, but no, I was the next tallest one, I was well-liked, I just knew that they were, and I was Alec's closest ally, and they knew that, so I felt like, if Alec goes, they're just coming for me next, and it's going to be pick, 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 pick. And I remember before the Alec boot, Mike said to me, don't lose your game fighting for Alec. And those words really resonated with me, because I felt like fighting with Alec was a part of, like, it was important to my game to fight for him. Mm-hmm. Whereas most of the other Goliaths sort of fled the scene and tried to ingratiate themselves to the Davids. I thought, let's use a strong pitch to why it makes sense to save Alec.
Okay, so the five people that end up voting against Carl, it's you, it's Gabby, it's Christian, it's Mike, and it's Kara. But it seems like that this group of five that got together very quickly falls apart, Dr. Allison. Oh, what happened? Why couldn't you guys keep it together for another vote?
Well, so it is very frustrating because if we could have kept together, that's actually the five people that I, even though there are some really strong threats in there, those are the five people that I really bonded with and connected with, or four people now that some of my other connections are out of the game. And I would have loved nothing more for us to stay together. But, you know, it's the loved ones visit. And I believe that when Angelina and Nick, along with Davey and Mike, are off on enjoying a barbecue, two vegetarians enjoying a barbecue, plus two others. I believe that we had some good conversations back at camp, Kara, myself, Gabby, and Christian, and it was clear that it was a song and dance. Like, Christian now at this point didn't. His footing and part of his apology plea to Nick and to Davey was like, no, we can get Allison now, which we see in the episode, we see him say, and I think he and I had a lot of song and dance, and where we talked about it was mutually beneficial for us to keep each other in the game because we were recognized to some extent as threats. And I remember sitting there the morning of the loved ones reward and saying, do we bury the hatchet, you and I, and or do we finally play this game together? And I was ready, like, even
though
I knew.
Who are you having this conversation with?
Sorry, with Christian.
With Christian.
I said all that, and like, we finally voted together. Can we play this game together? And it was sort of like, and I remember quoting Harry Potter, and I said, neither can live while the other survives. And that's just a nerd moment of mine. But
what
point
house
was
are
that,
you?
So interesting. I thought I was a Gryffindor all my childhood years. I was a Gryffindor, and I took it recently and I turned into a Ravenclaw. Yeah. So I don't know. I would like to be both if possible.
Yeah.
But
I have a friend who thought he was a Ravenclaw, but it turns out he was a Gryffindor.
Oh, how fascinating. And what are you?
Not really.
I think anything related to Harry Potter is fascinating.
I'm a Hufflepuff, Dr. Allison.
I can see Hufflepuff traits. And actually, my boss is a Hufflepuff, and that is the best possible thing, because that means that you are very caring and you are thoughtful of many other people's feelings.
I try.
Yeah.
not according to Mike White.
Well, I'm not going to touch that.
That's fine. I'm sorry. I've taken you. You're talking about something very important, and I've taken you off course.
So, I mean, Christian and I have this conversation. We agree that we're going to play the game together. And then I come back and Gabby's like, he's lying to you. He doesn't want to play this game with you. He's ready to write your name down next. And I'm like, oh my, okay, God, I thought, couldn't it just be simple? Couldn't it just be these four other people that I really like? And we at least vote together once, one more time. But of course, Survivor is never that simple. And so this is where the wheels start turning. And obviously Gabby pitches Christian to me. And I think, now I'm operating under the mentality, like, Christian doesn't want to play with me. Mm-hmm. Christian is a threat to win. So I am happy to write down Christian's name.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot more happens in that. Then I say to Gabby, I say, you know, I know my name is being written down as well. What do I do if there is an idol? And Gabby, this is sort of, we've talked about this, but she sort of shrugs her shoulders and is like, yeah, sorry, I guess it's just going to be you. And obviously that answer is not acceptable to me. And which is factors into then, you know, Mike and I talk, and Mike and I say, like, or he tells me, you know, Christian has an idol. Christian definitely has an idol and is going to play it. And I'm like, okay, well then, let's vote for someone else. And he's like, oh, Nick and I don't remember who votes for Gabby, but he's like, two people are voting for Gabby. And if Gabby had not been so willing to just ride me off as like, she was going to lose one of her two closest allies. And it didn't really matter if it was Christian because he didn't play as idol, or if it was me because I was idled out of the game. I was kind of like, well, she's very cavalier with our relationship. If I'm so expendable to her, then I'm not going to try and derail this plan where she is now going to be the person that's getting idled out of this game. And looking back, I was happy because, again, it's like, it was going to be me. So any scenario where it's me versus some other name, I'm content to have it be the other name and not rock the boat with that plan too much. But when I think about my game and what I should have done, I should have come to Gabby and I should have said, okay, let's get this group to write down Christian's name. Let's flush his idol. But you and I, and either Christian or Kara or someone, we need to write our own, a different name. And whether, and I think, did Davey have immunity at this point? I think it should have been Nick. But regardless, like, I should have been more willing to save Gabby, because by letting Gabby go home, I restrict my options. It's like a tunnel is closing in on me, and I am getting, the farther we get in the game, the fewer and fewer alliances I have and the fewer and fewer options I have. And that is why this move, even though at the time I was like, it's fine, it's not me. And I was content to, especially when Gabby turns around and is like, sorry, Allison. And I'm like smiling internally because I know she is about to be her name. I wish though I had saved her. And then I think I also wish in terms of agency.
Well, what could you have done?
What I could have done is said, okay, Gabby, they're writing your name, you and I and Kara, write down Nick's name.
Mm-hmm. Would she have done that?
I mean, if it's her now at this point, it's her.
No, I mean, would Kara have done that?
Oh, I believe Kara and I were so close. I mean, that's yet another, everyone is going to talk about their relationships that aren't played out, but Kara and I, once we decided we were in this together, we had a day two ride or die when we were out with the machete getting palm fronds. And we rekindled that a couple of days after the merge with the Mirror Alliance. And from that moment forth, I mean, there was like Kara and I were, people knew that Kara and I were close.
Yeah.
So Kara would have done that. Gabby would have done that. And I think that would have been a better move than letting Gabby go home. But at the time and the context, I was just content to have it not be me. And I think the other thing that I reflect on is I should have, this is a moment where people can say, did Allison have agency? And at the time, I remember talking with Mike and being like, I'm going to write down Gabby's name. And Mike goes, no, don't do that. And I'm like, why not? And he says, like, the votes will be for Gabby. Like, trust me. And we don't want Nick to know that you and I are talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And because Nick didn't know how close Mike and I were. And I wish in that moment that I had just had like, I felt like I had agency at this vote because I knew where all of the votes were going, but I, in truth, probably lacked agency if you were the outsider and I was sitting at a final tribal talking about why this was a move that I was a part of.
Is that type of thing important to the jury? Like, I understand, like, when we have the Survivor Wiki open, you can say, oh, well, Allison voted the wrong way on this vote, on this vote, on this vote. But in terms of the person that's sitting there at that final tribal council, is that something as a juror that is even entering into your mind?
I don't, so I do think that the thought of what is your story to the jury going to be does enter your mind. And I do think agency is an important factor in building your, I'm going to use the term survivor resume. I think there's flashy ways to have a survivor resume, and I think there's less flashy ways, and agency and being the driver of the vote is one of those ways. I think the other like problem for me is I was identified or thrown around as a threat, whether people felt that in earnestness or not, it obviously can be discussed at length. But I didn't want to be the one then that was driving move after move, because I fear that if I was the strategic front for every move, then it would only enhance my threat level. So all of that is to say, I think part of why in post-exit press, people have doubted some of my threat level is because there wasn't always the sign of agency. And I think this is one of the points where I could say maybe the perception was lack of agency, even though in my mind, I felt like I was just as much involved in the decision for Gabby to be ousted as many other people. Because basically everyone knew the vote except Gabby. So if you know the vote, you feel like you're a part of the plan.
Okay. So now things are really starting to blow up. That group of five that voted out Carl has turned into this circular firing squad where Gabby wants to take out Christian. Christian wants to come after you. And now the whole thing is blown up here. And by the time we get to this vote off of Christian, I'm still not even sure about what's going on here with all of these different arrangements.
Oh, my goodness. So this is funny because I think a lot of people like gave me heat for telling Mike about the potential of Nick voting out Nick. I guess Davey had immunity at this point in time, if I'm remembering right. I don't know. But, you know, Carol wants Nick out. I want Nick out. And
I believe that Mike wins immunity in this round. I don't want to.
I'm sorry.
Besmirch Mike White on his immunity win here.
I would never. And just a brief aside is that there was a moment when Mike wins immunity in which I say, even Mike at 85 years old.
Yeah, that was a good line. Dr. Allison.
Well, so what people don't know is that was a running joke between me and Mike where he started the game at one age, and then the farther he made it, the more he aged. And so I told him he shouldn't have made it so far because then I wouldn't have been shouting out about him being practically double his age. But we just loved that that was included, and we joked that Hollywood is historically ageist, and now as a result of me saying that, he won't be able to get any acting gigs here for it. But anyway, so yes, you are right that even Mike, a spry Mike was able to win an immunity. He managed his balls better than I could manage mine. Couldn't resist. But so people gave me a lot of flack for telling Mike about the plan, which Davey put forth to Kara, and Kara then relayed to me of blindsiding Nick because there was a perception about Nick having two idols. And I think what people don't realize is that this day on the beach was insanity in that we had a resurgence of terrible weather. And the night before, it was freezing cold rain, definitely worse than the beginning of the season. And now we have 0% body fat and nothing to keep us warm. And I remember that all of us were huddled and we had our second tarp literally over us and tucked under our heads. And it felt like we were all being buried alive, which is just a terrible feeling. And so no one had a good quality night's sleep. And I think that that's like part of, I know Christian described this as the foggiest day in the game for him, but given how terrible we all slept, how physically depleted we all were, things were moving so fast and it was very hard to keep up. But essentially, yeah, we wanted to blindside Nick. I was ready to blindside Nick. And then I wanted to include, because Mike and I were so close, I was obviously going to include him on the plan. And this is where, by not showing Mike in my relationship, it doesn't make sense. But from a viewer standpoint, we're like, why is Allison doing that? Like, that's so dumb. Jeez, this is not how you pull off a blindside. And this is what saved me, in fact, because Mike was the revolving door of information. And Mike knew that Davey had an idol that he could only play at Final Seven, that Nick indeed had an idol. And so this is where it was critical that I let Mike in on the blindside, because he was able to derail that plan and essentially save me to some extent.
Yeah.
And because I would have yet again been the name that was written with all these many idols being played. And so that what we talk about is I was like, okay, Davey has an idol, Nick has an idol. And I, you know, at this point, Davey has played an idol for Christian. I can't rely that an idol won't yet again be played for Christian. And so I say, well, we have to split the votes. And I can't remember, I believe it is me who and Mike who both vote for Davey, but, you know, some group votes for Christian, Mike and I vote for Davey, and then the remaining votes are naturally for me. And the reason for that particular split was well thought out, and it was because I was worried that Davey would play an idol for Christian or Nick would play an idol for Christian, and then I would be left being idled out of the game. And so my hope was like, we had three potential or like that we would get it right, so to speak, as mm-hmm. in that they, some one of those two between Davey and Nick was going to play for themselves and like, hopefully we would, and Nick was voting with us actually. So that helped. And it made sense that it had to be between Christian and Davey.
Now, in terms of not saying anything to Mike, I don't see what your other options are, but because I kind of feel like that the walls are closing in pretty quick on you here in that in terms of the seven people that are left, the only people that I could even see on the board that still would potentially even entertain going to the end with you, I feel like are Mike and Kara.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So I mean,
Christian, Davey, Angelina, and Nick, none of these people really want to work with you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would say Christian, it's funny because even though I voted for Christian multiple times and Christian votes for me multiple times, we actually worked together so much of the game that I do believe there was some potential working potential and we just couldn't ever get on the same page. And I think part of that is because we were both having to duck and dodge, and by ducking and dodging, it naturally meant that the person we were exposing was the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Anything else on the Christian vote?
I will say that when Davey got up to play the idol, I was very nervous. Obviously, I was checking my pulse. And then when Nick got up to play the idol, so this was weird. Because he played a fake idol first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he played the real idol and it was all very confusing. But at the time, like he was like, should I play it? Angelina tells him not to. And he's like, oh, I'm looking at Allison and I should play it. And in the moment when we come back to tribal, I'm like, oh my gosh, that couldn't have been a more perfect tribal for me. Like the intended target went home. Two idols were flushed out of pockets of people that are not my alliance. Like hallelujah. Everything is looking up. But that's not necessarily the case.
In the short term, things are going to look up.
Yeah, in the short term. And the reason I say that is because the idol that Nick plays is the idol that ends up, being the idol that Angelina gets. But you're right. In the short term, it will. And I'm able to survive once more. And I'll say that like this next morning, I mean, I was up at the crack of dawn and I was searching for an idol because now the social optics of it all are not relevant. Like when there's six left, it doesn't really matter if someone's looking for an idol. It's a free for all. So I actually thought that they were going to time lapse me and Davey because the two of us looked for idols so much because the two of us now are the two that we know our names are being put out there. And we were like scaling multiple walls. And I remember Davey being like, and I was following him too because I didn't want him to find the idol. And then I was inevitably going to be idled out at that point. But he was very impressed with that I was willing to climb up so many rocks. And he was like, God, I thought I would have shirked you by now. And I was like, no, I am still with you. Shirked me, shaking me off of his. No, I don't know. Gotten rid of me.
Yeah.
So with the Davey boot, it was interesting because it felt like it was my name and Davey's name for whatever reason, whether it was because my name was a default name or because people authentically thought that I had winning potential at the end. But I guess that at this point we have the immunity where Nick wins the immunity, right? And mm-hmm. he has the pasta reward and he takes Angelina and Mike. And so I love the moment that they include post him winning the immunity challenge where I kind of say I'm clawing my way through and I'm still smiling because that is a moment that I get to go back to and just take so much pride in that response. Like truthfully, I wanted to sit there and be like, they're starving me out. They want to starve me. And I'm just so grateful that instead I said I can still fight my way through this. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say they're starving me out, do you feel like that the other players were working together to not get you any rewards because that's how they wanted to beat you in the game?
So I don't know that there was intentionality behind it, but I mean, I do think that there was some degree of wanting to weaken me. I think importantly, vomiting those wraps was also an inflection point physically for me. Because after that point, I had severe muscle twitching, and I do believe that I had electrolyte derangements as a result of it. and that this affected me in numerous balance challenges in particular. But but it was a clear cut physical point that I can look back to of I was very excellent, like not very excellent. I was strong in challenges leading up to that point, and then from the physical depletion onward, like I had a harder time. I mean, I think I still performed pretty well in some of them, but I had a much harder time. And I think that's just the toll of that many days of starvation on the body and sleep deprivation. And also there is an added complexity when you feel the heat of seeing your name written down.
Four tribal councils in a row as the second biggest vote getter.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. So there was that added emotional.
Is that a record? Do you know that?
Reddit claims that it is a record to serve a consecutive. I believe that someone else has gotten votes like at more
the second
tribal
most
councils.
Votes. Okay. Yes. Just to reset that. So Carl gets 5 votes and you get 4.
Yeah.
Then ultimately Christian's because Idol is played. So in the final tally, Gabby has 2 votes and you have 1.
I'm at 5.
Okay. And then in the Christian tribal council, Christian gets 3 votes. You get 2. The 2 Davey votes are nullified. Yep. So again, 1 less than the person who goes home. And then at the Davey tribal council, he'll get 4 votes and you'll get 2 before ultimately then your number comes up at the 5th of those tribal councils. That's a lot of Allison votes.
Yeah, I get 13 total votes, I believe. And I think the record is that to have name written down for 5 tribal councils consecutively and to have survived by 1 vote, which the last one was 2 votes, but survived by 1 vote for 4 tribals. I think that's the record. I don't, whatever. It's, I'll take
The total votes in a season is certainly higher.
Yes.
But you're saying that you, in a 5 tribal council stretch, have the record for most votes over 5 tribal councils.
Well, yes. And being voted for consecutively, like there's something about it being consecutive.
Okay.
Because I guess if someone else has gotten voted for 6 total tribal councils in a season, but they were not consecutive, whereas I received votes for 5 tribal councils in a row in a season, which is a record.
Well, okay. But so that move to vote out Christian, though, does pay dividends here because the 4 Goliaths are going to get back on the same page here for a vote and vote out Davey. How much did you have your fingerprints on the blind side of Davey?
I mean, I think that at this point, everyone takes some agency here, but I am going to give a lot of credit to Kara and to Mike. Because it was either me or Davey. And obviously Angelina and I, at this point in time, I mean, she is not interested in sitting next to me. She is not interested in working with me, but she, but we are able to kind of give her the storyline that if a David makes it to the end, a David is winning. And I think there was, you know, there's so much about did the women ever think about getting on the same page together? And actually so many times, even when Gabby was still in the game, I distinctly remember doing the like witch's brew that we see Parvati do to Natalie Bolton. And that's because I thought that maybe the 4 women could get on the same page, but Gabby didn't trust Angelina. Angelina didn't trust Gabby. And that was obviously never going to happen. But in this moment, the storyline that we sold was that the 4 Goliaths remaining, and in particular, the 3 women and what we called our like female adjacent male, and that was using Mike's terms, not my own, because we had so many manly, big hulking Goliaths, and so it's interesting that Mike was the last Goliath standing, who like would be self-admittedly say that he's not like a Dan or an Alec when it comes to physique. I don't know, but so yes, I'm going to give credit a lot to Mike and to Kara for kind of coaxing Angelina into the decision to write down Davey's name rather than write down my name.
Okay.
And I'll give credit. I mean, and you know, Angelina says at some point, I could have voted out Allison multiple times. And that's actually true. At the Gabby blind side, she could have written my name down. At this point in time, she could have written my name down and she didn't. And obviously there was a lot that goes into that. I think that this is where Mike was often talking her off of the ledge or swiveling her neck so that her head was going a different direction. And that's how I saw the game, right? Because I was working so closely with Mike that I'm going to see it through his lens when it comes to a decision regarding where Angelina's vote goes.
Okay, now this is a big round. Of course, this is ultimately going to be the last round for you in the game here at the Final Five, but there's so much to talk about with everything that's going on. Of course, we're going to start with this big idol hunt. You talked about how you and Davey were out looking for the idol. Ultimately, it's going to be Angelina who's going to find the ladder, climb up 100 feet onto the rock wall. Ultimately, she is going to come down with that idol later on in the episode. And Angelina has a plan. And she wants to get the votes on her. And then she wants to play her idol at that tribal council. And also then make a fake idol for you to find as well.
Mm-hmm. What's so funny about just her pitching her plan is, like, if she hadn't pitched a plan, that may have been what happened. But because she was like, I don't have anything to say at Final Tribal, why don't you guys let me have this move? It's like, you don't tell people what your move is. So that's just a separate aside. But yes, okay. I think everyone thinks that the day that they leave is like the most dramatic day in the game. But day 37 in the game was true insanity and also true high comedy, I do feel. And so, I mean, at this point, I've seen my name written down, I guess, 9 times, four tribals.
Nine times.
Yeah. Yeah. It hurts, especially when you're like, it's not because I'm not liked. Like, that's that, you know, you're like, people do like me, I think. But no, 9 times. And so I'm already very emotionally fraught. And I remember we come back from camp, and it's funny because the show kind of pitched it as Kara floating the idea of Mike by me. And it truly felt like I was the one that was like, okay, well, originally, I should say, it was Kara, Mike, and I connected, talked, and we said, okay, so we'll vote out Angelina. And this was before I knew she had an idol. And I actually go on one of my confessionals, and on this confessional, I think then immediately after, Kara tells me, Mike just told me that Angelina has an idol. And I go on my first confessional of the day and I like cry and I say, I have to turn against one of my allies, because it's worst case scenario that Nick has won immunity and that Angelina has an idol. Like, those are the two people that I can't work with. And I remember being very much so like, do I let myself just get idled out of this game? Like, because I would have to turn against my two closest allies. And I kind of talked about like, okay, Kara was transparent with me. She told me about the idol. And I remember meeting Mike right after my talk, and we met on the rocks, just the two of us. And I was like, you know, I'm worried Angelina has an idol. Full well knowing that he knows that Angelina has an idol. And he's like, she doesn't. We're fine. We're good. And that was sort of exactly what made me, part of what made me choose Mike over Kara, in terms of who am I going to have to turn against, was number one, Kara was clearly still being open and earnest with me, whereas Mike was just fine, you know, lying to me and letting me get idled out of this game. But number two is I really did start to see, like, what is the question is the saver versus the saved. You know, I had this story, and if I won, it would have been Allison saved herself tribal after tribal. Mm-hmm. But because Mike is in the finals, and I mean, Mike did save me to some extent, but the story that we get is, you know, Mike making these moves, and therefore it would have been, Allison just sort of happened to survive for that. She was saved for that many times. She's not that big of a threat. They decided not to get rid of her ultimately. Like, time after time, they decided she was a less of a threat. And so I remember walking back from my confessional, and I was so conflicted. Like, this ate away at me. And I said, I remember sitting on the beach and having this moment, and it's like very meta, I guess, but I remember thinking about, like, when I talk to my family, and in particular my brothers who have a Survivor themed podcast about
the stand-up comedians,
that's right. I thought they would be so disappointed in me if I just let myself get idled out, if I rolled over and died, if I didn't fight for my life at the very end, like you fought this hard for this long, don't stop fighting now. So I come back and I walk along that beach with like renewed fervor. And I decide in that moment, like, okay, I'm going to talk to Kara. And I say, it has to be Mike. If I convince Nick, will you vote with me and vote out Mike? And I talk about like, he's played a beautiful game. And so then I go on the raft and I talk to Nick while Kara and Mike are back at camp and Angelina is on a confessional. And I convince, at this point in time, I pretty much convince Nick to vote out Kara. To vote out mm-hmm. Mike. And I basically, all I say is he has played a like beautiful game, and it is, we do not realize how under the radar every one of his moves are, but he has been the puppet master behind move after move, basically Carl blindside on. And I say, so you think you want to sit next to him? We all think we want to sit next to him, because he had this perfect way of being like, oh, you don't, I mean, I'm so rich. I'm want to win so that I can afford Spanish tiles, because I'm getting my backyard renovated. And so you're like, he would joke about like how trivial the idea of the money was to him. It was, of course you wanted to sit next to him. Like, he wanted you to think that he was your goat when actually he was a mastermind. And I had this revelation of just how transcendent, to use Christian's work, how transcendent his game was. And so I'd say only the most complimentary things about Mike. And then I come back to the camp and Mike does blow up at me, and in a way that I had never seen before. And in a way that, because of how deep our friendship was, and because our friendship was one that I needed to know was going to exist outside of the game, it was devastating. And here I thought, like, this,
but
was
what
my,
happened? Why was he like that?
Because, so what I didn't realize is Kara said, oh, she's telling Nick to vote for you. And so what's funny is I come back and he blows up at me, and I think, oh my God, Mike can read me that well that he knows that I'm coming for him now. Like, wow, he knows me so well up to this point. This is scary. And then he won't even look at me. He won't even talk to me. He won't make any sort of eye contact. And it was tense. It was uncomfortable, and it hurt. And so then meanwhile, I decide, you know, I'd been looking for the idol, even though Angelina was carrying her satchel around all day that day. And I was like, well, she's never once carried her satchel. And all of a sudden, her satchel is glued to her side. Very suspicious behavior. But it only confirmed that she had an idol. But I'm like, I guess I'll just go. And really, I wanted to retreat and be separate from camp. But I said, I'll go look for an idol some more. And I guess it's like, he and I couldn't occupy the same space that day, which is crazy because we were so close. And then, I mean, this whole shenanigans with the idol. So first of all, I see Mike call Angelina call Mike into the forest. And then I come up on them at the well, and literally they are like, I see Angelina putting the idol in the palm tree. And she goes, oh shit. And I like walk up and I see this blue sticking out, and I grab it, and I'm like, oh, interesting. Which is why there's like such a flat affect when I find the idol. And the response that we get from Angelina is, she's like, oh my God. And she starts, you know, turning on some crocodile tears. She's like, oh my God, Allie, you found the idol. Now I'm going to go home. And she's like, I need a minute to be alone. And she goes off to the beach to be alone. And meanwhile, Mike goes, well, aren't you going to read the note? And I'm like, well, it's a fake idol, but okay, I'll read it. And this note, mind you, is crumpled. Like, clearly this is not a fresh idol that has just been planted. And also, like, I've looked in this palm tree right next to the well 100 times at this point. And so I read it. And like, while reading it, I said this before in my exit press, like, no hallelujah chorus went off. There was not that fluttery sensation that I imagine you would have when you found an idol. Nothing. It didn't smell like genuine idol leather, you know, as Davey would say. Like, it was clearly a fake. And also, it was very poorly constructed, because there was
talk about the feeling that when you say that, is that just sort of like some sort of, because I've never found an idol or a fake one even, but that do you get like a certain feeling when you open up a real idol?
Well, I wouldn't know because I've not had the experience, but I imagine.
Is there like a bliss that comes associated with it?
I think that the thing is that when you watch someone Final Idol, it's always with this like triumphant musical score.
Yeah, but I think they add that in after, Allison.
Are you sure? Because I thought that was felt within your heart.
I don't think it's like one of those greeting cards where you open and the music plays.
Well, I mean, the point is that I was expecting a hallelujah chorus, and weirdly, there was no gospel choir on Fiji at that moment in time. So I read the note, I come back to camp, and I tell Nick and Kara I found a fake idol. And I like say it, and they're like, no way, really? And like, we all laugh about it. I'm like, oh yeah, Angelina's on the beach. She needs a moment because she thinks that I think it's real, and she wants me to believe that she's going home now. And we all like, we truly thought it was like hilarious, which was good to have a tiny bit of humor in the face of kind of some ugliness. Mm-hmm. But that was it. And at this point, and I should say that then Nick and I like had a private conversation one more and in which I say, you know, Mike just blew up at me. Like I have never seen Mike like this. He just blew up at me. And I think Nick was still mad about the Davey blindside since there was a final four deal between those and a final three deal, in fact, between Nick, Angelina, and himself. And so I used all of that as my social leverage. And he said, and I also said, if I win final four immunity, I will take you to the end. And I think that this proves I did have a lot of confidence out there. And Gabby talked a little bit about part of what made me a threat was how I carried myself. And I do carry myself in a very confident manner. And I did believe that against any iteration of person, I could win. And the person I feared the most was actually Mike and not Nick. But all of that is to say, and I don't even actually know that I would have taken him, but I was going to say whatever it took to convince him to vote with me. And so he shook my hand. And in that moment, I knew that I had done my job and I had convinced him. But what I underappreciated, and this is the same as like with Gabby and why I should have tried harder to recapitulate the votes a different direction, I underappreciated Kara, my closest person. I just assumed, because she said, yeah, if Nick's game, I'm game. I just assumed that she would be with me. And I, of course, understand why she voted me out at this point in time. But I should have done more work to fully convince her that I was the smart person for her to take, even if I wasn't. Like, honestly, I think it was a good move on her part.
You do?
Well, I mean, I do think that's a good question. I think I do believe in a final tribal that was something like Kara, me, and Angelina, I do believe that I was winning. I do believe Kara was getting votes, and she was certainly getting some votes. And I think if she articulated herself well, which she is a very eloquent person, she would have been able to get more votes than I would have expected. I do think that actually I would have probably taken Kara to the end. And so I think if I had won, she would have made it farther in the game and she would have had that chance to plead her case. Mm-hmm.
Feel like that for her, that this would have been like a signature move that she could have told the jury about, where I feel like that she does not have that in her story.
And that's, I guess that's a fair point. I think that's, again, me being able to see it from my perspective, where I was like, I'm the one that convinced Nick. And so it wouldn't have felt as like I was the one whipping votes. It would have felt like it truly me saving myself, but that depends on how the story is told at a final tribal. Does Kara say this was my final grand move, or do I say once again I saved myself? And so I guess your point is really well taken. I do think that it was like, of course I'm going to believe it was smart to get rid of me. If there is some legion of I am a threat, like that's going to be why I'm saying I can understand. I guess I can understand why she would target me at this point in time, rather than target Mike.
Okay. All right. I want to ask you about Angelina and the relationship since then. We saw it was very strained on the show. How have things been after the show?
Well, I guess first I just wanted to like talk fully about playing that idol. And I couldn't understand, like at this point in time, it's my name. Like there's not any doubt in anyone's mind. Like they want to get rid of me and that I'm the person they need to get rid of. So I couldn't understand the strategy behind her fake idol play. And truthfully, it just felt like she wanted a truthfully, it felt like Angelina wanted, and I'm speaking really candidly, if she wanted to be the last woman standing, regardless of whether or not that she was the one to win. And what that meant is really taking out me. And I think that part of it is she was hurt by the terms contingency plan, which are clinical and clerical and not an attack against her character. But that, and she was self-admittedly a mean girl when it came to the idol play. You know, she says that in the confessional. And I do think it was a mean-spirited play that was partly born out of strategy, but partly born out of some of her own hurt feelings, and partly burn out of just wanting to, it felt like, twist the knife on my exit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we talk about my exit and we talk, I mean, because there's also, before we gloss or jump to like my relationship with Angelina, Mike's comment at Tribal Council about my dignity was one that really came from left field, especially because in convincing people to vote out Mike, all I did was glorify his game and glorify the type of person he was. And so it was just so hurtful to have my character attacked. And especially because I think back to how I played this game, and no, I'm not perfect. Like, God forbid. I have many flaws, and I'm not just talking strategically. I have many flaws, and this game can reveal many of those. But in general, I'm so proud of the type of person that I was on the island when I'm stripped, not only of my bare necessities, or not only of my creature comforts, but of my bare necessities. I think it reveals the truest parts of our character. And I was proud of what it revealed about my character. And then all of a sudden, I'm having my character assassinated and having my dignity questioned for playing the game.
So you're saying that Mike blew up at you and you feel like that he had a very thin skin about the very innocent offense against him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. And like, all this is to say, like, this is me day 37 and my perspective on that day. And part of why, like, I joked that I wasn't going to cry during this, I mean, this recap, and don't worry, I won't cry. But part of why I did cry.
You can if you want to. There's nothing wrong with that.
I know. I actually stand behind full emotions, but no, I'm very at peace with everything. But day 37 and watching it back will always be painful to me because it will hold not only the end of my dream, but it will also hold like hurtful memories between both Mike and Angelina, hurtful memories that I have been able to move past, thankfully. And at the end of the day, when I watch what my final kind of words are in this show, they are ones that are, I'm joyous about the experience. You know, mm-hmm. I say, thank you so much for letting me be a part of this dysfunctional family. And that is how I see these people. That is how I see all 19. And that includes Angelina and that includes Mike. And in fact, like it's especially Mike and I are, I mean, he's my person from the game. Like, there's no doubt in that fact that he is my person from the game. But it doesn't, you know, negate the fact that that was a hard day to have to watch back.
Mm-hmm. When you say he was your person from the game, do you mean that in the time since the game that you guys have rekindled the relationship?
I think that our cast, and probably every cast is really close, but I definitely know that there's about five people that will be lifelong friends of mine. And we, like, that's why it's funny. Our relationship was never shown in the game, but
will you tell us who they are or will it's like a blind item?
I don't know. They know who they are. And, but sure, Mike's one of them if you want to know that. And I think it is that we did.
Let me see if I can guess. okay. So I'm going to guess it's Mike, Gabby, Alec, Kara. I don't know who the fifth one is.
Well, maybe, you know, you're four for five. Let's just let the, and there's actually probably a few others. There's probably two others, but you would not guess them. We'll just go with that.
Okay.
And so all of that is to say, yeah, Mike and I have rekindled, we've kept our friendship alive. I think the most important thing when we talk about the final tribal is like, he apologized. But our friendship immediately after the game, I recognize like that one moment was a moment where he snapped and it came just from a place of, yeah, maybe being a little thin-skinned on day 37 and being confused because he's like, I saved you all the way through and you're going to repay me like this? That's his perspective. Yeah. So that's day 37.
So that's Mike. But what about Angelina? Did you guys ever repair that relationship?
Certainly. I mean, actually, Angelina and I got massages the day, 2 days before the reunion, the finale. And it was literally a couple's massage. And I think that day was really good for us because we had since then actually hashed it out. And there was times where I wasn't ready to talk about it because we had a informal cast reunion at one point. And I just didn't want, I wanted to be able to have a superficial friendship with her, but I did not want to talk about day 37. And then we hashed it out. I interviewed at UCLA and actually had a wonderful day with her when I was visiting California. And I thought, yes, we got to be friends outside of this game. And then you watch it all back and it reminds you of the hurt feelings. And I'm not saying I was innocent. I wasn't an innocent party. I played this game as passionately as she did. But it doesn't, when you watch it back, it brings up those emotions. And so then I'll say, we like fast forward to this couple's massage that we went on. And that was actually really healthy for us because it was a moment where we really did get to lay it all on the table, especially given that the
reunion
was literally at all. Well played. I would ding you right there. but it was good to be able to talk about it and to like both apologize for any of the things that were hurtful within the confines of the game. And I think the most important thing is that Angelina and I are both really strong, empowered women, and we represent that in two different ways. And I think that the game, the edit, demonstrated the type of power that Angelina brings to an equation. And I think that my storyline, you eventually get it, but that there was a quieter amount of power in how I conduct myself. And I think we talked, you know, the question that came up to Angelina at the finale, you know, she did talk about owning her behavior. And I think that's the most important thing in terms of when we talk about why is Survivor different for women than men. And that answer is long and storied. But I think part of it is that you also do need to own your actions regardless of gender. And I think I needed that most from her was just to own that, like, was this strategic? Was this personal? Where did that lie for you? And just own the decisions that you made out on the island.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the final tribal council, and ultimately your vote was going to be for Mike, even though that in going out of the game that he had said to you about that you should go out with dignity, it seems like that you were a solid Mike vote the whole way through. Did you waver at all between Mike and your other friend Kara? Did you consider Nick? I'm sorry, I realize I said Kara just now and not Angelina.
Angelina. Yeah. So I, in my like Jury Speaks video, I say that I'm going into that with 45% Mike, 45% Nick, and 10% Angelina. And I did say if she brings up rice negotiations, then there will be no way for her to garner my vote. But yeah, so I was very open-minded. At least I wanted to be open-minded. I remember saying, I don't want to be a bitter juror. And what being a bitter juror looked like to me was not voting for Mike because I was spiteful at the comments that he made. And I think I'm so like proud of my vote and so happy that I got a vote for Mike. In that tribal council was very open-minded to the idea of Nick. And there were moments where Nick had me convinced that he should be the person that I should be voting for. And I think across the three domains Nick probably did play the best game across the three domains. I actually do. I know this was something that came up in some of the other exit press. Like if he didn't win immunity at five, was he going home? And I know he said no, but at tribal, I remember like it was certainly a possibility that he was going home. That was not a guarantee that it would have been me regardless. Like I do think that this narrative of we can't let a David into the finals was one that was powerful and compelling and convincing.
And smart.
and smart and smart because look what happened. And so I do think that it was important that he won the immunities when he won them. I also think that because he didn't win one before then, it was a way for him to downplay any sort of threat because
before he won three in a row.
Before he won three in a row, I mean, we were fixated on so many other people that we neglected Nick, right? Mm-hmm. And so my point being, I'm glad that he is our winner. I'm glad that he gets to carry the torch. And I think he did a really good job at Final Tribal. I think that the most important thing for me is the game. Okay. As a fan, I have always respected and responded to slightly flashier gameplay that is very idle heavy, that is advantage heavy, that seems like big moves, big move-itis a little bit. Now that I have played the game, I actually really celebrate the types of games that Kara and Mike played, which is one that was really strong social games, because I think maybe it's my game to some extent too, but it moves back to OG Survivor and what it means to play the game before we had so many advantages introduced into it. I mean, I'm glad that we have all those advantages because the game is constantly evolving, but I do think there's something to be said for relying on pure articulate arguments convincing someone to vote with you rather than against you. And so that's why my vote falls the way it does, is because I personally think that Mike had the best social game of those three remaining, or did the best job of the type of Survivor gameplay that it turns out I respect and admire the most. I didn't even know that until I went through the process. I thought one of the most remarkable things is that from Christian downward, excluding Davey, he had a final two deal with every single person. And yet none of us were threatened by that. Like, I even knew that that conversation was happening with other people, but I thought, no, I'm the real person that he wants to sit next to. And the reason for that is, like, he would tell me, he played into every single person what they needed. And for me, like, he played into my ego and said, you're the type of woman that I celebrate in real life. You're the type of woman that I write my movies about. Like, not me, like, being in his movies, but, like, you're the protagonist of this season. And so you're the one that I want to sit next to. I don't care about the money. I want to sit next to you because I herald what you are in real life. And that argument convinced me that despite him having other final two deals, that actually I was his real final two deal, and I was his real person. And that at the end of the day, he wanted to see me win rather than win himself. And that is a very, very convincing argument that is impressive, in my opinion, to do that, not just for me, but to do that for five other people.
Okay. Allison, Dr. Allison, we have a couple of questions for you on some things that we didn't cover in your telling of the season.
Great. I am all ears.
Okay. This is a question that is from Alex Bergman. Survivor has had a lot of doctors. Which specialty would most prepare you for Survivor, and how would a radiologist do? Because that's what Alex is. Do you think is there a particular field of study that you think would best prepare a doctor for Survivor?
Obviously, I'm partial to internal medicine because that is what I do. I joke that residency was training for Survivor. Residency, like I said, you go 30-hour shifts without sleeping. You go 30-hour shifts sometimes without eating. That is a parallel Survivor. But I think more to the point is that I learn how to, there are so many patient dynamics, and I learn how to negotiate with patients, and I have my
agenda. We'll start with a low-ball offer, right?
Yeah, low ball of everything at camp. I haven't learned negotiation at, I don't have a Yale MBA, so I'm not as good at it. But I do learn how to interpret what people need from me while also convincing them of what I believe to be the best thing for their health and their well-being. And I think that I deal with a whole host of personalities because I work at a hospital where I care for the uninsured, underserved population, and I also care for people that are state senators who fly their jet to come see people at my hospital. And so all that is to say, I do see the whole spectrum of human condition. And that is, I think, the most beautiful, like, part of my job, and that I get to approach those people with the same sort of compassion each time. But I'm kind of derailing because I'm just saying that residency trained me for Survivor. Obviously, I'm going to be partial to internal medicine. I do think that there is something about internal medicine doctors are highly cerebral, but they're also practical. And internal medicine doctors are, I mean, empathy was probably the one trait that was the strongest in what came through of me. And that is, I think, the best internal medicine doctors and the best doctors in general are empathetic. I mean, of course, we want our doctors to be competent. And then as to the radiology component, I mean, I don't know how many x-rays I had to read on the island. It wasn't many, though, so you'd be surprised.
Well, I think you got to look at it in terms of what is going to give you the best metaphor for going into a tribal council. So if you're in radiology, you could talk about like what it's like to see the x-ray of the tribe right now and see, you know, what's at a joint.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And I think the other thing
I see a hairline fracture in the tribe right now, Jeff.
We're a very disjointed, dislocated shoulder right now. Yeah, I can see. You're right. Actually, the metaphors are endless for Alex. So I think, you know what? He should apply and he'll probably be the next doctor on.
Okay. David Oakley wants to ask you, did you consider hiding your profession from the others? Did the theme make it easier to reveal? If you wanted to, and we've seen people on various Survivor seasons, including Nick was not upfront about what his job title was. Did you think about coming into the season and saying a different job title, or the way that the opening Matt chat started? Did that make that almost an impossibility for you?
So we talked about this a lot in my casting, actually, whether or not I would lie about my profession. And I said then and there that no, I was going to be transparent about my profession. And then I actually got to talk to Andrea Belke before I went out, and I ran this question by her. She was like, no, I
can
think
I ask
that
you, what were the circumstances that you talked to Andrea?
She's friends with my brother. So yeah, after I applied and made it on the show, they became friends. And so that was helpful and a really good conversation. And some of her words definitely stood out to me in my gameplay. And we are the same archetype, as it turns out. So to the question of, I thought about lying about my profession, but then I thought about my strategy is going to be the most, just be really authentic and genuine and make true, solid human connections and use those then to kind of propel your game further. And so I thought, wow, if I lie about my life is my profession. I have for 11 years been on this path of becoming a doctor and practicing as a physician. And how will I connect with people if I put a black box over 11 years of my life? And in particular, I mean, I use some of the stories from the hospital to either for humor or to really gain people's trust. I talked a lot about having to deal with death and dying. And this was a way that it was a tool I used to gain trust because they saw me as an empathetic person who was being genuine with them. So I thought about it, but then it didn't make sense. Going into the game, it didn't make sense. And then when I was a Goliath, it made it easier to like own up to the other aspects of me that make me a Goliath, if that makes sense. I wish that I had downplayed certain things that on paper aren't impressive, because in Survivor, they're not relevant.
Okay. Here is a question from Martinez, who says, in his interview with Josh Wiggler, Nick said he stole your vote because you were the funniest person to troll, quote unquote. Can you remember any other stories about how Nick trolled you?
I didn't know that I was so easy to troll. I mean, no, Nick, honestly, I think he was pretty peeved that I was flirting with the Goliaths. I mean, flirting with the Strikeforce.
Whoa.
I don't remember him trolling me all that much, actually, but maybe I'm just that like vulnerable to being trolled. I don't even know that I'm being trolled.
Okay. All right. Let me see. Felipe Chimon wants to know, who is the better fifth place doctor, Dr. Allison or Dr. Mike?
Great question. I mean, I guess it depends on what you value. Jesus. I love that Dr. Mike's name has come up more than anyone from my whole entire season.
You might get him to listen.
I will. I mean, he has FaceTimed me in the like in the middle of the night.
Oh,
so.
Boy.
Yeah, I feel honored in that regard. But you give us a good question. It depends on what you value. And I think I liked Dr. Mike's game, but I liked my game too.
Okay. All right. So that was a non-answer.
I'm going to hedge. I mean, well, it's, I'm going to sound really cocky if I say I'm my game. And I don't want to disparage Dr. Mike only ever getting to see the edit of his game and not the full.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. don't listen to my deep dive with Dr. Mike also, because it gets really off the rails.
I unfortunately think I did listen to it.
Yeah,
and
yours is way more focused.
More on track. Okay.
Yeah. This is not a specific question that I have from the listeners, but, you know, I everywhere I go, I see online all of the memes with you and Janet from The Good Place. Do you follow that TV show?
So I did not follow The Good Place, and then the very first meme on Reddit came out with my professional photo from my intern year, in which I have this high neckline, red, preppy as all get out dress, and my hair is the exact same color and styled as Janet. And I'm not going to lie, I look at that photo and I'm like, yeah, okay, I look like Darcy Carden. And so then when people are relating me to Janet from The Good Place, I was like, I don't know what a Janet is. And I decided to watch the season. I actually don't really watch TV like post-Survivor. It's been many of the weird things about my post-Survivor life, but I don't get joy out of TV, except for I do watch The Good Place because that show gives me a lot of joy. And I don't actually think that we look that much alike, but I am happy to lean in to the metaphor of me being Janet from The Good Place. And then, I mean, now I watch it all. And so talking about The Bad Place and The Medium Place and posting as many GIFs of Janet as possible and saying they're me.
Yeah. Look, you could do worse.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
So what's funny, I mean, you probably don't watch The Bachelor franchise. But I thought that and I would love this. Let's put this out into the universe. My friends tell me I look like Becca, the Bachelorette. And I was like, yes, let's have that
okay,
be
let
the
me look. Becca Bachelorette. Let me look this up real quick.
See if those are the vibes I was trying to put out, but I'll take Darcy any day.
Let me see. Becca from The Bachelorette. This is Becca the brunette.
Okay, Becca, the brunette.
Becca Cuffrin.
That's the one.
Okay. Okay. Was she? What season was she?
She was The Bachelorette very recently.
Very recently.
Yes.
Okay. How did she do?
She got second, and then she became The Bachelorette. And now she's engaged.
Now she's okay.
So I guess she won the game.
Good for Becca.
What's your analysis? Having seen me in person,
Does she look like you? And I think I'd probably still go Janet from The Good Place.
All right.
But I have not seen Becca in action, where I'm a big fan of The Good Place.
Okay, well then I'll take it. And that's actually why I decided to really embrace this, is because Janet is
more powerful also.
That is right. So I am going to take I'll be a Janet. I can be a good Janet. I can be a bad Janet. Whatever type of Janet you need me to be, I will be.
Okay. What else? What else do you want to get on the record?
Okay, there are only a few other things that I wanted to get on the record. I think we covered most of them, or I was able to thread them in. But I do want to have a moment to speak about my threat level, because this is something that I have grappled with a lot.
Threat level.
Yes. Especially given that some people say I was a threat. Some people say, why was Allison a threat? And I just want to put it out there, especially. And then it's like, I am the hero of my own story. Of course, I saw myself as a threat, and I saw myself as winning this game. But I want to and I also hate that because of the edit that I received, where I wasn't a big player and moves where I felt like I was involved strategically were not highlighted. And I actually think the episode that I was the worst strategically was the one time that I had strategic content. But all that is, so I hate that I'm sitting here and defending my own game or self-promoting, because I would actually rather be here and just would celebrate the other people, because I love these people that I got to play this game with. I wouldn't want to sit here and sing the praises of so many people. But I'm going to own my own game for a moment. And I'm going to say that here's why I believe that I was a threat. Number one, and I mentioned it, I was chosen as the strongest Goliath female, and that did send a message out there. Number two, I consistently did step up for puzzles and challenges. And there was a perception, even if I, because I didn't get a confessional after winning immunity challenges, I'm talking tribal immunities, it didn't get associated in the viewer's mind, but it was associated in the player's mind that I was the one that led the Goliaths to multiple victories. And I think there also was this narrative that very early on, people started talking about me as a threat, and those people included Natalie and Jeremy. And they kept saying, I would never want to sit next to the doctor at the end. That was Natalie in particular, who I really, really, really love Natalie. But she kept saying, I wouldn't want to sit next to the doctor. She called me Kim Spradlin around camp. She called me queen. All these things because her idea was to try and put the target off of her and onto me. And this is what is framing people's perspective of me very early in the game. And I think Nick in his exit press said, or in his interview with you, I was like, yeah, I got fixated on Allison and I have no idea why. Well, I think the reason why is because he had Natalie and he had Angelina both talking about the good of me, which is nice. It's flattering. And especially this is at a moment when Angelina and I in the game, we were working together and we did have a strong relationship. But I believe Angelina even said to him at Jabini, like, I would never want to sit next to Allison at the end. And so he is walking into the merge with that perspective. And that's how certain people did get fixated on me. Mm-hmm. And then I think that there was this idea of jury threat. Like I had really strong friendships and relationships that weren't highlighted. And that's not just Alec. I think that when we looked at the jury, especially the early jury, it was comprised of a lot of the Goliaths who I got along with and with of Tiva. And if I went down the line, you know, surprisingly, I do believe that Elizabeth would have voted for me in almost any permutation from Davey onward. And she has kind of held that up in mm-hmm. the conversations that I've had with her. John and I did have played the game, his whole game together. And we had a really strong relationship. I believe that John thought I was his closest, if not his second closest ally. And he was pretty honest with me about a lot of his plans. Like, he planted a fake idol at Tiva and I knew about it. He wanted to blindside Alec and was talked through this plan with me. He was really open with information with me, and I was less open with information with him. And I think that he was rooting for me at the end. I think when you look at my relationship with Dan, what's funny is, remember, he was willing to play an idol for me, at the vote where my vote was stolen. At his boot, he was willing to play the idol for me, and he didn't really hold me culpable for any of the events that led to him leaving. And I don't know that I would have had Dan's vote like guaranteed, but I think I would have been able to articulate it quite well. Alec, I think that obviously we had such a strong bond. I think that our bond was insanely close and there was really no lies and no deception between the two of us. And he, in fact, when he left, he gave me permission to vote for him. And he also said, I will be campaigning for you on the jury. The problem is that people knew that he was going to be campaigning for me on the jury. Mm-hmm. And then we get into Christian and Gabby, which, I mean, I think that they are very analytical and cerebral players who would have been making the vote for who they thought was the best player. And it wouldn't have been a fully emotional vote for either of them. But I do think their votes were mine to earn and that I would have been able to articulate that argument. And I'll acknowledge, like, I wouldn't have gotten Carl's vote. I wouldn't have gotten Davey's vote in pretty much any combination of people. But that was six people that I think, like, even if we exclude who's in the final five, because I don't know what's going to happen at the end, and the end game matters more than almost anything else, but that those are relationships that I could have really relied on. And I think the final thing I'll add is that I was liked, but more to the point is I was respected. And this, it comes back to what Gabby brought up, and it comes back to how I do carry myself is there was a confidence about how I carried myself around camp. And it was a confidence that it hopefully didn't border on arrogance, and much more so. It just was that I kind of owned things that I did well and would occasionally want those celebrated, because in real life, you want your successes celebrated. And I think in Survivor, that's exactly where that's the final problem in my game, is that I couldn't suppress that desire to lead, that desire to stand up, the desire to like have people take notice of me, to command, never demand attention, but to command attention. Mm-hmm. And that is why I think, like, was I a threat? Was I not a threat? Would I have won? Would I not have won? I can never answer that. I can take comfort in the fact that in some permutations, I do believe that I had winning potential. But I just think that that was something that, like, the edit didn't fully tell that story, because they didn't need to tell that story. And I wish that some snippets of that nuanced game of me and Christian, like, having inside jokes about the deep, deep, deep love of Survivor, if that had made it on, you would have known, oh, Christian and Allison really do have a mutual respect for each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe Christian would consider voting for Allison. And I don't know that he would vote for me. I'm just saying that there was potential, there was hypothetical. And if I was making it to the final three, the story told is very different. It's not drastically different. It's just so much more colored.
Dr. Allison, nobody has ever ended a podcast with closing arguments before. This is unprecedented.
Well, I don't think I even necessarily wanted to have closing arguments. I just
closing points.
I guess
closing
it's
statements.
Just, and it all comes back to like how much this game means to me and how much I cherish every memory and every moment. And I know Steven has said it before, like, the experience is one thing and watching it back is
sure.
another. And the experience was the most beautiful and challenging and difficult thing that I could have ever gone through. And then watching it back was weirdly a harder experience for me to grapple with. And not because I faced negativity, but because I felt neglected at times. And that was truly disheartening as someone who honors this game and who respects this game and who promotes Survivor to all to the end of the earth.
Yeah. It felt so disconnected from your original experience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad I had these closing arguments. I mean, I would sit there and I would make that pitch about any person like sitting towards the finals of why they were a threat to win. And I do think that every single person had grounds to stand on and played beautiful games. They're just different games. And it's at any given moment and any given night, the jury values a different thing. And our jury took jury duty very seriously. Hence why I had closing points.
Dr. Allison, when you're not extolling the virtues of Survivor and not watching TV, well, what do you do in your spare time? If you have any.
So yeah, I actually love to work out. I think this was part of the thing that like even led to my threat is at Ponderosa, I was working out and I remember Natalie seeing me working out and being like, the doctor is intense. If you saw the doctor working out, you wouldn't want to go against her. But I really love cycling and box. I box. I had Bee visit me recently and all I ever want to do is be trained by Bee because she's so badass. But I love boxing and then I love reading. I was an English major and I'm a nerd. And so
what do you read?
If you give me, well, obviously Harry Potter, but any sort of 19th century British literature, I could talk about Jane Eyre and Pride and Prejudice all day long. And then I read a lot.
Stephen Fishback is more your guy for that.
Okay. I thought so. But a little
I'm more of a 19th century American literature guy myself.
Well, American, I love some of that too. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently reading, I read a lot of medical oriented fiction or autobiographies. And I'm reading The Emperor of All Maladies now, which is a must read for every single oncologist out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Allison.
I'm like such a boring person. Like, wow, I read and I work out. I'm obnoxious.
You read,
and boring.
You work out, you go to work, you help people going through the
That's
most difficult
right.
times of their life. It's a lot.
It's a lot to handle. And I love traveling. And truthfully, now that I have 19 friends across the country, I just love getting to see my Survivor family.
Okay. You talked about your brothers, your sister. How many siblings do you have?
Well, I believe this is part of why I'm a freaking Goliath. I'm one of five kids. I'm the fourth of five. And one of the things that they always wanted me to talk about was my family and like in particular the pedigree of my family. But I just felt uncomfortable with that. So, which is to say, I'm not from a pedigree. Both my parents did go to college, and obviously my dad went to med school, but I'm not from some place where like you had to go to an Ivy League. It just turned out that many of my siblings did end up at Ivy Leagues and played college sports. And on paper, it sounds really impressive.
All right. Well, Dr. Allison, I had a lot of fun going through all of this stuff here with you today. All this time really did fly by. I hope you had fun.
I had the best time talking to you, almost as much fun as playing the game.
Well, listeners may not know this, that you worked a full shift today before you came on the podcast.
I did.
Like, this was all I had to do today.
I did. I put in a nice 11 hours or so before you and I got to sit down. So.
Just kidding. I was with my kids for a bunch of time. So it's probably right. About the same.
You put in more effort than I did then. Let's be serious. Raising children, having to deal with children is harder than...
Do you know how many Legos I stepped on today, Allison?
I can only imagine an endless supply of Legos.
All right. Dr. Allison, if people want to follow you on social media, where should they go?
They can follow me. Oh my God. This is so funny because I never thought I would promote myself. My Instagram is really all that I put any effort into, which is minimal, and it's really for me, but Allison Raybould, and I'm Allison with one L. I do have Twitter, and my new favorite hobby is posting GIFs of myself and captioning them. So thank you to the person who creates GIFs of me because they are a real gift.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I see. Is it there?
Yeah, you see that? And okay. And my Twitter is actually A Raybould. And the first time I ever got a Twitter was so that I could tweet medical answers to multiple choice questions from medical school. So if you go real deep in there, you might learn a thing or two. And then the thing I'll actually plug and the thing I care about people following is more my brothers. They're hilarious and they're stand-up comedians who do some really good work. So search the Raybould brothers and you can watch some hilarious clips of them.
Now you have the thing that I can't get over, the two of your brothers are stand-up comedians?
Yes. Okay. So it's a federal prosecutor, two doctors, and two stand-up comedians in the family.
Sounds like the start of a joke.
It is the start of a joke. I just haven't written it yet. I'll have the stand-up comedians.
Give it to your brothers.
That's right. Yeah, no, one of them worked on Wall Street for a couple of years, hated his life, and started to save up his money. And the pendulum swung the other way, and now he is a stand-up comedian. And that sort of gave the space for the youngest one to be able to be a stand-up comedian. But they're both extraordinarily talented. And I mean, if you talk about bravery and courage, like, I had a very linear path to do my passion, and their path is so much more wayward and scary and treacherous to me.
But they don't perform together, right? They're separate acts?
No. So they do shows where like each one does their stand up. One is the headliner each night. And then they have sketch comedy that they write sketches, and I think they're hilarious writers and should be picked up for a show or something like that.
Okay. And we'll tell Mike White.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want to use your friendship to like, I guess I'm so uncomfortable. The reason I went into medicine is because I can't promote a single thing. I'm sitting here like cringing at myself right now for the last 3 hours in the self-promotion that had just happened. But I am going to promote one final thing, which is to say that we are trying to release a deep dive of my analysis of the game. If you didn't get enough of me now, there's a lot of funny stories to come, and it's just awaiting CBS approval. But that's the podcast has spoken.
Okay.
With my brothers. Yes.
All right. It's all
your
happening.
Your rival podcast, yes. With its 300
yes.
listeners.
Yes. All right. Dr. Allison, thank you so much for coming on, and then hope to talk or see you again soon.
I certainly hope so too. It has been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Okay. And have a good one. Okay.
All right. You too.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Allison Raybould here on the podcast, talking through everything from her game in Survivor, David versus Goliath. Not much more for me to say here at the end of this one, other than we are starting to get closer and closer to the preseason for Survivor 38. And we will have a lot of content coming your way when we get there for Survivor Edge of Extinction, the highly anticipated season of Survivor that is on the way. Thanks so much to the patrons of Rob is a Podcast, which make all of this podcasting possible. It was 5 years ago this month that we kicked off the Rob is a Podcast Patreon program. Since then, I've been podcasting full time about all of these crazy shows, and it's all thanks to them, the patrons of Rob is a Podcast. If you're interested in becoming part of our Rob is a Podcast patron community of all of the biggest fans of Rob as a Podcast and these crazy reality shows, you can go ahead and check out my Patreon profile at robhasawebsite.com/patron for all of the benefits of becoming a Rob Has a Podcast patron. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you guys so much for listening to all of this podcast content. Today, we'll be back again soon with much more on Rob Has a Podcast. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.